Not much.
Not much. Wow, really?
Not much right now. We did a modern politics interview today with Tom Sunic, the Croatian diplomat and professor.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. That'll be out.
I believe he wrote the intro to the book by Kerry Bolton that Antelope Hill just put out.
Yes, I think he wrote the introduction to it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He just wrote
Tyranny of Human Rights. I think it's called something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, he's a great guy. He had some very interesting insights on the Ukraine Russia situation because he used to be very pro NATO when he was younger. You know, because NATO, he was in Yugoslavia when it was under communism.
I can understand why.
I mean, he's Croatian, but he's an amazing guy who used to be regularly on the speaker circuit back in like 2014, 15, 16. And, I haven't seen, you know, he's been living in Croatia, but I invited him to come to check out an NJP thing at some point. So I certainly don't think
that people have to, and I can understand why certain types of people in Eastern Europe would be wary of Russia, but I just, as an American, I want to just send the message like, I get being wary of Russia, and that's fine. You are totally entitled to that opinion. But believe me, you don't want to be pro NATO.
No, well, that's what he said. It was just that exact position.
It feels like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, but I mean, geez.
Yeah. Who benefits from this? You know, like who benefits from the pro NATO position? Well, it's something I saw today.
We have a Polish friend on the line here. We'll get him on in a second. But something I saw yesterday was that like Netflix. So it's sort of like Poland is kind of still maintains some ethnic integrity and nationalist, and Polish nationalism is very big in Poland, etc. But I just saw they have like a brand new like Netflix facility. A new office for Netflix is opening in Poland, and they're planning on making it a regional hub for Netflix for that whole Eastern European region. And I'm like, see, this is a problem. this is why you don't want America. Right here. Mm-hmm. This is the American virus spreading. It's like a little blister, pustule of Americanism on your country that is just going to spread and get more infected. But
I also arrived in the mail yesterday on your recommendation, Esau's Tears. Is it Esau or Esau?
I've always said Esau's Tears.
Esau's Tears.
The subtitle is The Rise of the Jews in the 20th Century or something like that.
Modern Anti-Semitism and the Rise of the Jews. And I opened it up, and the first page I opened up, the first paragraph was a quote. it was a quote by Treitschke, who was a great German nationalist from the 19th century, who I actually don't know enough about, but I've heard nothing but good things about him. But he says, "What deadly hatred of the purest and most powerful exponents of German character, from Luther to Goethe to Fichte, and what hollow, offensive self-glorification. Here it is proved with continuous satirical invective that the nation of Kant was really educated to humanity by the Jews only, and that the language of Lessing and Goethe became sensitive to beauty, spirit, and wit only through the Jews, Berna and Heine. And this stubborn contempt for the German Goyim is not at all the attitude of a single fanatic." So I guess he's reacting to some Jews. And then the author says, there was some substance to Treitschke's charges.
Well, this is the thing. That's Albert Lindemann. And he is, I've learned he is a Mischling, and he's a Mischling with a Jewish father, not a Jewish mother. So his mother is a Gentile, which Borzoi has a theory on why that's important. I think it has to do with the kinds of traits that you get from your dad versus your mom. And he's sort of like, you know, your mother is where your emotional traits come from, and your father is where kind of like your rational traits come from. I mean, just in a basic theory, right? And so he's sort of like the Jewish mothers are the ones that pass on the ethnic hysteria, where the fathers pass on the cunning and guile and teaching you how to be a good, do deals in your own interest and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So if you don't have a Jewish mother, you're going to miss half of a Jewish education. And so you're going to maybe be cunning and guileful and smart and intelligent and good at dealing with people, but you might not be an ethnic fanatic. You know what I mean? Now that's a theory. I think there's something to it. It's a little bit of just-so storytelling, but you know, everybody does their own. As long as you're aware that that's what you're doing, I think it's okay. But I want to tell one story very quickly before we get into Ukraine stuff, and hang on to the phone, you Ukraine guys. We will get to you. We want to talk about it. It's my favorite thing to talk about. And I want to talk to the guy that wants to talk about, Travis McMichael too. I want to talk to you too. So all you guys stay in line. I just want to tell this quick story. So I got a call yesterday and an email from a journalist claiming he had just been to my house. And that he wanted to do an interview with me about NJP in Pennsylvania. And why are we in Pennsylvania? What's so great? What are we doing in Pennsylvania? Are we specifically Pennsylvania oriented organization, whatever? So I called him back and I said, okay, so, you know, you went to my house. So I'll do an interview with you, but I want to do it at your house. So what's your address? And he said he'd have to ask his editor to see if, he could do that. And I was like, well, what does your editor have to do with it? And so we went back and forth like that for a while, but then he actually said, I will ask and see if I can do it. And I was like, okay, he's going to obviously come back and say no. So he called me again today and he said, did your editor clear it? And he said, no, but you know, my family isn't comfortable with it. Now in the meantime, I'd found out where he lives, right? It doesn't matter. I don't need to tell anybody, but I found out. And so I asked him, I said, so, you know, your parents, the house, because this guy's a 27-year-old journalist for paper in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he lives with his parents in a town called Malvern, Pennsylvania. That's all anybody needs to know about it. So I was going to go to his house in Malvern and do an interview with him. He didn't want me to, so I was like, all right. But we had a little conversation on the phone, and in the course of the conversation, he made a number of stunning admissions to me. Now, this is the same reporter who had written an article about Charles Bousman in Lancaster and Trey in Lancaster about a year and a half ago or so. And obviously he was trying to connect me to that or NJP to that stuff. And he's trying to do a whole thing. He had also done an article just last month in February about Patriot Front, supposedly recruiting people in Lancaster or something like that. Because apparently Pennsylvania is like the top state for like white supremacist propaganda, according to the ADL. It's like a big right red mark on their map. Anyway, so he clearly sees a kind of a career opportunity in that, because he's 27 years old. He's white. He's worked for Lancaster Online for, as far as I can tell, 4 years or so. And I don't think he's got many prospects for promotion. So what does he want to do, right? He's going to like, I will kiss up to Jews. And in the course of the conversation.
He's all his stories writing about like the milking procedures of the Amish. They don't get anywhere, you know?
Yeah. He did a thing about, asset forfeiture, by the county government and the records. They weren't being transparent with their records. So he did a freedom of information. They didn't want to respond. So he filed a court complaint. And he forced them to release their records on that. And there's a picture of him from like 2019 standing in front of a courthouse making an announcement about how he beat the county government in court. And there's like nobody there. Because nobody gives a shit, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, who cares? It's just bureaucrat gang. I mean, there could possibly be a reason you'd want the county to tell you, like,
well, maybe, maybe the people care, but the people that pay you as a reporter, they're not going to care.
No, the people that care, well, I don't think really anybody cared. And the reason people don't care is because, well, the people that pay him as a reporter don't care, and people in the community don't care because they're just not informed. I think it actually is probably a worthy thing to find out who is the government seizing property from and why. But also, you know that this, but the main thrust of it was property seized in drug deals. So he's trying to do activism for blacks. You know what I mean?
Okay.
He's trying to do some kind of.
And I think there's probably a lot of drug dealers in Lancaster, but yeah.
Well, I mean, there's drug dealers. There's anywhere there's a big city, there's going to be black drug dealers. I mean, that's just how it is. And yes, sometimes the city or the county might seize like some drug dealer's SUV or something like that, right? And he wants to know about that, right? Anyway.
Right.
So I had a conversation with him on the phone today, and basically he was acknowledging to me that nobody really gave a shit about his journalism generally. But when he wrote the story about Trey and Charles, he got accolades from the local Jewish community. I mean, he said this to me directly. Cause he kept, basically what I was saying is like, you keep saying you're doing a story about us because the community cares about it. And this is what I've said. Journalists have always told me that because of what you guys say, the community cares that you're there because you say things and you're like, there are stories where like targeting certain people in the community and that those people have a right to know about it. And so I wanted to get more specific and he said the Jews. He literally said the Jews. He said after he did the story on Trey and Charles, the Jews came and thanked him. The Jews in Lancaster came and he said it directly. And so I started dying. I said, did anybody else? And he said, well, there was also some local politicians. I said,
you're
okay.
You're learning how to become a good reporter.
And I said, okay, so what's local politicians? And he's like, I don't think I need to share that with you. Those were private conversations. I said, okay, so you do stories. Most of your stories are ignored. Then you do a story about, you know, white nationalism or white supremacism, as you call it. And you get accolades from the Jews in your community and from certain local political figures. And in those are secret conversations. And he's like, I characterize them as secret. I'm like, you just said they were secret. But, you just said it. You can't tell me because they're private. So you get private. So essentially your work, these are the people you're really working for. And the reason you are now doing more stories like that is because you got these accolades. I mean, it's so obvious. It's clear. Thing is, everybody knows how it works. I just say it.
Yeah.
Everybody knows how it works. We, you, me, us, NJP, TRS. We just tell people. He knows how it works. If he didn't know, he wouldn't be doing stories because Jews are the ones that like those stories. That's kind of the point I was making to him. I was like, you. And then what happened was I said, well, let me ask you this, Carter. That's his name, Carter Walker. I said, do you think that, for example, communities who are affected by Zionism, by Jewish nationalism, have a right to be concerned about Zionism and Jewish nationalism in their communities? Communities like Palestinians or maybe Iranians or Russians or white people. And he clammed right up. It's actually amazing the speed with which he clammed up. And I was like, but you said that communities have the right to know about people whose activism is targeting them. And I'm like, and I'm not talking about targeting them rhetorically. I'm talking about targeting them with missiles and bombs.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm not going back and forth with you anymore. I'm done. I was like, okay. So I see what, I see where you draw the, cause before that, I'd asked some questions about like Black Lives Matter and a few other things like that, right? Other activist groups and stuff, anarchists, Black Lives, and he would answer, we're perfectly happy to talk about those groups. Soon as it was Zionism and Jews, I'm not doing the back and forth with you anymore. You know, anyway, it was extremely
it's just
fun.
It's just like the, like a lawyer, like a person who goes to law school to like stand up for the oppressed and they end up becoming like a corporate lawyer fighting insurance claims, you know, of the little guy. Because I mean, that's where the money is. It's just, it's like,
yeah,
either, and that's why, you know, it's funny when you told me about this, I'm tempted to almost feel like bad for him because he's just some fucking, he's not like a career scumbag like some people, you know, he's just some local reporter, some white kid, but he needs to really think about it because he is making his devil's bargain right now. He's thinking in order to advance, I need to, instead of asking questions like, why are the Jewish people so powerful in my community? Like, right. That's what a good journalist would do. In fact, that's what Trey Garrison did with Lancaster, was poking around, looking at who are the local, and it was popular.
Oh, I actually forgot about that. That whole thing was done to shut down a newspaper.
To shut down a newspaper.
So he basically did journalism to shut down a newspaper on
the
behalf
only
of
other
Jews.
Point of view on, Lancaster Online is the only paper in, from what Trey told me. Lancaster Online is the only paper in that county, and it is total shit-lib, crazy shit.
He wouldn't confess to that either. I kept asking him what the point of view of the paper that he worked for was, and he's like, I can't speak to that. I was like, dude.
People were saying it was massively unethical because the little, and Trey, you should do a whole podcast with Trey, we can tell this story, but the paper that he was helping with, it was not a white nationalist paper. It was just a non, like, ultra shit-lib, rainbow flag BLM paper.
More like
paper.
Sort of center conservative kind of thing.
Center conservative. And they used this idea that Trey is connected with it to shut it down. Lancaster Online used it to shut down their competition. I mean, it's just naked, like,
But I don't even think that's why he did it. I don't think he saw it as, I don't think he would have cared if there was competition to Lancaster Online, because Lancaster Online, it's not like, It's not like it's the same market. It's not like it's the same people, right? It's not like anybody reads Lancaster Online anyway. They don't. Nobody reads any of that shit. And he knows it because he told me that nobody reads their stuff and his stories usually get no reaction. So I'm surprised he can even draw a salary working for them. I mean, he still lives with his parents. So obviously it's not very much, but, so I'm wondering like, you know, it's not even shutting down the competition. It's because of who they were and their viewpoints and because Jews didn't like them.
Right. Well, they're in with the paper. They control the one paper in town, or they have the sway. They have the pull.
They control it. Do you think a single thing Jews don't approve of gets printed in that paper?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. That's where this guy is really gutless and despicable because it's like, why are you not, you don't have one ten-thousandth the courage of Trey Garrison, who actually asks questions of the powerful, who goes to the places, if there's a powerful group in the community that can shut down a conversation, that's as a journalist
that's
who you should be writing about.
And the problem
that's
is,
the story.
He is outraged more by what Trey says than he is by the actual exercise of power over free speech.
Yes.
And so that, and he probably is. I'm sure he's some kind of aspirational precarity experiencing libtard.
Yes.
And that's not my new word. These people are I don't call them enjoyers. I don't think they're enjoying it, but they're precarity experiencers.
Yes.
Not that we all aren't precarity experiencers, but their way of coping with it is to be more and more libtarded with every passing minute. But, anyway, it's an interesting thing. I cannot, post any recordings of it because it's not something I can do, but I can write out, and I probably will write out a transcript of it, if you will, from memory, of course, from memory. But and we'll see, and people will enjoy that hopefully, but anyway,
yeah,
so that was a fun story, a fun little thing that happened. It was very funny when he just openly admitted to me that he's essentially just working for Jews and certain political figures he didn't want to name, and it's sort of funny. Every journalist I've ever talked to has treated it like it was an absolute affront when I asked them questions.
Right.
But I'm also like, you should know, if you've done research on me and if you've listened to other things, any other conversations I've had with journalists, you know it's always a fight. You know that for anything you're going to try and get out of me, you're going to have to fight tooth and nail for about an hour of me just grilling you. And he then admitted that he only was staying on the phone with me because he was hoping that he could work a piece of information out of me by talking to me.
Of course, it didn't work.
Well, that's what makes me think he's green, because he admitted a couple of really, I mean, I knew he was doing that. I'm not stupid, right? I know that he's doing that. But that's why I didn't give him a single piece of information that he wanted to publish.
Five years ago, I think, there was some liberal journalist for one of the big papers at MPI. I think it was the 2016 MPI, and this woman was asking questions. Well, this woman was asking questions of the panel, and when the panel discussion broke up, I asked her a question, and I tried to engage, just pick her brain a little bit. And, I was naive enough to think that these people actually are, like, thinking when they ask questions,
Yeah.
And man, her demeanor was just like, don't talk to me. I'm not here for a story, I'm not here to learn anything. I'm not here to find out.
Right, I'm here to get a money quote and leave.
Yeah, I'm here to just get, comb through everything to try to find some stuff I can twist and take out of context and plug in that'll reinforce whatever narrative has already been decided on, before I even go to the event, before the event's there.
Yep.
The narrative has basically already been written, and I don't want to, even talk to you. I don't want to even, acknowledge that you're a human being. And,
Oh, I've gotten them from the whole time and they get really outraged. And I always, what I do is I know that they have their smooth, they get trained sort of how to do this. And they've got their sort of smooth talking way about them. And they have to, I try to use the way they've been trained to present and sort of make them actually be like that. Because they present as they're nice and harmless and interested and humane in order to get something out of you. And so I try and exploit the fact that they have to keep up that act to try and get something out of them while not giving them anything. And eventually they'll just drop the facade and just get mad at you. But they get really affronted at the idea. And I always say, well, I'm a person, you're a person, let's have a conversation. You want to have a conversation with me, that means we have a conversation. And they end up saying, it's not relevant, what I think isn't relevant. I'm like, if what you think isn't relevant, why are you even here?
Yes.
If what you think, well, you think what you think is relevant because you're doing a story on me.
Yeah.
You're not just an automaton. So, yeah, no, it's really frustrating.
They want to hide behind that.
And they'll pretend like they want to have a conversation, but then I'm like, all right, let's do it. Let's have that conversation.
Well, you know, well, here's the other thing. It's like, if you are there representing some people, like, cause here's the thing. A journalist is going to say, well, I am not, like, I am responsible for my editor. I'm just a 27-year-old kid who's trying to answer some questions and put a story together. So I'm not a strong, like, advocate. I'm not a political leader. So I can't really engage with you, the leader of the NJP, on this issue. But it's like, okay, but you're here as an agent of people who are leaders. So are they willing to talk to you? Are they willing to? No, they're pretending you don't exist. They're pretending they don't exist. The Jewish community in Lancaster is pretending that they're not even there, and they don't have any power and they don't have any pull. Mm-hmm. And these local, you said they were elected officials when you were telling me about it privately.
Elected officials.
Okay. So these are people who've taken an oath of office to serve
that's
the
what
public.
I said. I said, you're talking to, I said, you're talking to elected officials and they're talking to you behind the scenes, saying thank you for your journalism, which now that you mentioned, I had forgotten about that angle that it shut down a rival paper, and you're not going to tell me who they are.
Yeah, and that they are answerable to the public,
and that's what I said. I said these
party,
people
are in a political
that's what
party.
I said.
So
these are public people. I said that's what I said. I said you're talking. So they're public officials. The people have a right to know, and you're not telling me. Well, you're not telling them. Don't even tell me. Write a story about it.
Yes.
So yeah, it's just, and he probably thinks, and in his own mind somewhere, he thinks he's doing something good. But he also knows.
I don't know if he really does. I mean, I think he tells himself he's doing something good, but like, I think.
At this point, he's gotta know.
Mike, I'll tell you, Tom Sunix told me today, he said that these true believers that were like Communist Party line true believers, that he thought were true believers in Yugoslavia, as soon as the wall came down and the Cold War ended, he goes back to Croatia, and it's like now suddenly they're true believers in capitalism and globalization. Yeah. And it's just, and they've convinced themselves. They act with all the, it's that upper middle class aspirational thing. And they're just super, like, they convince themselves they are the champions of this thing, and they'll change it overnight. They'll change it overnight.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is true.
If we took power.
Yeah, this guy would be doing stories.
He would call
that were favorable to us.
Hey, man, remember you?
He'd say, hey, Mike, remember me? Remember that great conversation we had?
Yeah,
I always liked you. I always thought that you were really smart on the right side.
I'm so right about that I don't have any career prospects as a white guy. I'm so glad the NJP is, again, give me a story. Give me an interview. I'll give you guys good press. I mean, it's just like, come on.
You do it. At that point, I would maybe even take him up on it if that were to happen, but I would still make fun of him and be like, come on now.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about politics now. So I want to bring in a guy whose name is now illegal in Germany, Z. You're going to talk about Polish, Ukrainian refugees in Poland. What's up, Z?
Good evening, gentlemen. Before I start on my subject, I have two special guests here who have a hot take on the subject. First one, wait, let me get him. All right. Hey, this is Lady G, and I'm letting y'all know that I called for the assassination of Putin because I want a free Russia. I want a free Russia in which, by the state mandate, a Spetsnaz veteran can inspect my ladybugs. But that's about everything I have to say about that, and now I'm passing it on to my counterpart, Slavoj Žižek. Hello, and I would like to start by saying I am no longer a Marxist nor a Hegelian. I am now joining the Islamo-Duginist movement, especially the two great philosophers, famous Chetnik leader Mikhailo Peinovich and famous Islamic imam Yusuf al-Jordani, also known as Eric Stryker. And I must say that America is part of this Semitic trash can called ideology. And America should not concentrate on Ukraine, but should concentrate more on the 6% that commit 52% and so on. But they won't, because this is pure ideology and it offends the black fellows.
That's good stuff. Yeah, that's fantastic. Fantastic.
No, but
Zizek impression.
The voice, or is Lindsey Graham actually there? Because that really sounded like Lindsey Graham.
Well, the Zizek was more impressive to me. Cause that guy, man, and it's what he says. I remember when he was going after, he attacked Kevin McDonald because he's like, I'm supposed to believe that just because that somebody is Jewish, that this affects entire ideology and worldview. And it's like, yes. Yes. Yeah, he was doing that whole sniffling. You got it down. Whatever weird vocal noises he makes, he's always touching his nose. I was always a cokehead at first time. I was like, yo, is this guy blown the fuck out on coke? What the hell? Why is he constantly, he's got some weird tick. I don't want to make fun of him for having a tick, but it's just, it is kind of off-putting at first. But anyway.
So going on the situation about the refugees. So interesting anecdote. So my mom lives in Poland. She's a libtard. Yeah. And was all about, oh, my poor Ukrainian refugees. And suddenly I'm starting to see a shift even among libtards in Poland where they're tired of this shit. And it's even coming to a point of anti-NATO sentiment, because it's now suddenly they have to see that these their sons, their daughters are going to, like, face the consequences of these actions. And it's starting, and a lot of these Ukrainian refugees are feeling entitled. And
I heard
the other day, she said she was sitting in a cafe and she saw some, like, she described a beautiful young Ukrainian woman just complaining that they didn't find her an apartment in the city, but they found a house for her to stay in a village. And she was just completely ungrateful about it. And my mom just rose up and started, like, yelling at her that, like, well, my impression of my mom is, well, you have Instagram, you find nice Polish boy, then you stay in the city. Maybe you marry. Why you complain? I take you back to Ukraine. Like, it's getting to that point where even libtards are complaining about that stuff. Because just the entitlement of it. And so they get the offer to go to some of the Western countries, but then, oh, it's too far from Ukraine. So now they have to basically, they're looking at it like, oh, I'm stuck in Poland, but I don't want to go anywhere else, but I'm going to complain about it.
Really? Now, my impression, though, is that the numbers that more Western countries than the United States has 100,000, but there's like 4 million of these people now. The United States is very big. And the differences between the United States and some place like Poland is Poland was very, very close to a Polish ethnostate. Like, almost everybody there was Polish. I mean, I'm sure there's people around the fringes that weren't, but probably 90% plus, right? Am I right about that?
Well, it's everyone's Polish, but then you get some, like, Silesians, like,
who
claim, oh, I'm Silesian, not Polish. But then when, like, libtards were offering a referendum to Silesians about joining Germany, a lot of Silesians, when they looked at Merkel Stan and how it's over there, they quickly went back to waving Polish flags.
Which is funny, because usually the tradition is when you get a referendum to join Germany, it's like 90% plus are saying yes. At least that was sort of the mid-20th century a tendency there. I can see why it would be different now. And the reason is it might not even be that they love Poles so much. It might just be like, well, there's blacks over there. They've got Turks and blacks and stuff. But, my thing is, like, the United States could absorb Ukrainians. It would be good for us to have some more white people here. And we are used to absorbing, ethnic groups. So we're not, the United States is not an ethno state. But they don't want white people here. Not in any way that would significantly affect demographics. And
it's sad when Brazil is willing to take more than the United States.
Well, the United States would be like, well, are they gay or black? If so, we'll take them. Because I guarantee you, what's so amazing is in seeing the ones that are going to Western countries and the actual percentage of blacks. Like, you know, if you're getting like 3 in 10 of them are black, and that's like what I'm seeing in Ireland and Britain. Like, where did that happen? Where do these people come? How did that happen? I mean, I'm sure there weren't that many blacks in Ukraine. How many could there have been?
Well, also, the thing is with Poland, so Western Ukraine used to be, well, it still is, but it was a stronghold of Banderist ideology.
Yes.
And a lot of the,
that's
like,
very anti-Polish.
Maidan first happened. Yeah. And when Maidan first happened, they were doing things like making an effigy of a Polish farmer, cutting his head off, throwing it at the Polish consulate. Well, the second that they saw that it's worth it to get because in Poland there are two tiers of, you could say, citizenship. There's a full citizen, and then there's it's kind of like it's called a poll card. So if you could prove ancestry of at least one grandparent being Polish.
Poltard? If you can prove you've been at least one generation of Poltards in your family. No, I'm joking. I've been on poll for one generation. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And suddenly all these Ukrainians who were like hailing Bandera are suddenly like, oh no, my grandmother was Polish.
Yeah,
because
okay,
it's an easy way to the EU and towards the Schengen.
Yeah, this is something I wanted to...
I just find it...
Oh, sorry. The Bandera thing. Now, I've talked about it a little bit on Strike It Mike and on Tedious, but I don't know if I emphasize as much how really anti-Polish Banderism is and how Bandera's first crimes, because he was just a career criminal. Like, I'm just going to be honest with you.
Oh, Bandera?
Stefan Bandera is just a freaking criminal. And he was his whole life. The Nazis put him in jail. Yeah, the Nazis thought he was a psycho.
I mean, the Nazis didn't want to work with him. The Poles didn't want to work with him. So I guess the CIA took him.
Yeah, so there you go. So when the Poles don't, well, not the Poles didn't want to work with him. He murdered in 1934. He and his people plotted to murder the Polish minister of the interior back when, Lwów. Back when Lwów, I know the W is pronounced in Polish like a V, right? Or something like that. But, when Lwów was a Polish city where he was born in Poland, in the 10s or the 20s or whatever, he was a vicious Ukrainian separatist that was just murdering Polish people. And he and his band murdered the Polish interior minister. And he was supposed to be sentenced to death for that because that's one of the most powerful figures in the country, right? He was like the right-hand man of Pilsudski.
Well,
and this guy kills him.
Among Ukrainian patriots, you have two schools. So you have the school of Banderism, and there was another school, which, and I mean, I'll say it, like Simeon Petlura, who was basically Pilsudski's puppet. But at the time when Poland was strong, like, and I speak to some Ukrainians who say that they wouldn't mind Galicia and Volhynia being like a Polish client state in a way at this point, because I mean, when you go over there, they can't run shit for themselves. And I don't want it to become a Polish client state at this point because Poland's run by Zog, and that'll just be another...
Well, here's the thing.
Another...
Western Ukraine is also run by Zog, dude, in a very serious way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's to the point now in Poland where they're giving like because a lot of people in the West will be like, oh, Poland's so base. And I'm like, no, they're giving scraps, like table scraps to people. And it's like a little rattle, like, hey, look here. We're going to say that we're against faggotry, but then we're going to allow a faggot like person in the same, which is like the equivalent to Congress.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Let them be very vocal.
Well, my thing is that, so, and also that new Netflix headquarters that's opened, that announced its opening this week in Poland. I don't know if you saw anything about that. I saw an article about that the other day. So there's like a big Netflix headquarters, supposed to be Netflix headquarters for Eastern Europe, is opening up in Poland soon. Or has opened up in Poland.
I mean, it's getting to the point where the Visegrad 4 is collapsing, which was supposed to be a step towards independence.
Right. Well, Visegrad was supposed to be a bloc that was going to push back on EU migration and pause. And they've just been, they've just been broken down. And this Ukraine situation has actually helped with that. It's given, Hungary is at least trying to maintain a bit of a, more neutral stance. Like, they're not letting stuff for Russia go, equipment go through their country, and they're trying to stay, I don't think they're sanctioning Russia, etc. And so for this, Polish-Hungary Friendship Day was called off because Duda doesn't want to be seen in public with Orban. So, yeah, Poland has decided to orient even closer to the United States and the EU and West, and sort of the sort of gay. I mean, I don't like calling, I don't like referring to the West as the bad guy. That's a bad thing, but like that's, there's really no other way to say it. So we can call it the gay, like the GAE.
Why don't you like calling them the bad guy?
Well, I don't like using the term the West as the bad guy. You see what I mean?
Oh. You like the West.
No, I know. These nations run by Jews, like Zog. I guess we just call it Zog.
I see what you mean. You wanna, yeah,
no,
you
the West is not bad inherently. It's the Zog is bad, right?
Right. I get what you mean.
Yeah.
The Occupied West.
Occupied West. That's a good one. The Jewish Occupied West.
Right.
Was that the Jiao? Jiao, just Jiao.
We got a new acronym.
The Jiao, the Jewish Occupied West. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, like, also what happened was, like, now there are theories because, remember a few months ago, the situation on the Poland-Belarus border with, the shitskins coming in.
Oh, yes.
And,
which was a bit
like,
of a troll.
The blame was placed on Lukashenko, but it's also like there is a theory going that Erdogan, because, Turkey and Belarus have a visa-free travel regime between each other.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that Erdogan was sending them, because Erdogan likes holding Europe hostage, and he always makes threats, I'm going to send them into Europe if you don't give me money.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a theory that Erdogan just piled them up into planes and started sending them, and then was like, well, we're not taking them back, and Lukashenko basically, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do with them?
Yeah, because I remember when I was talking about this. Now, here's my thing. Even if Lukashenko was doing a flex with that, what I found interesting about that situation was the fact that it sort of had to be admitted that refugees and population is like a weapon. That these are weapons.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? And yeah. they're not, it's not just, oh, everybody come in and we're all enriched and it's so great. It's like, no, this is a weapon. Like there's a political problem between Russia, Belarus, and the Jiao. And so let's say Lukashenko said, Turkey, send me refugees in here. Let me just mess with Poland. Now, you might not like that. I can understand why a Polish person wouldn't like it. But the fact is, it's forcing the truth out. Refugees are a weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't like it if I were Polish,
With Poland right now, the problem is, like, with the Ukrainian refugees, like, my fear is that Polish Zog is going to, even once the conflict is over, they're going to start training Banderists in Poland.
Dude.
Because...
Yes, I would be really concerned about that.
And already, like, there are Banderists who want, like, who think that, like, Lublin and Przemyśl, the border regions, that those belong to Ukraine.
Oh, wonderful.
They've actually, a few years ago, they started, like, desecrating monuments to Polish nationalist soldiers of the National Armed Forces and of the Home Army.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And it's just the chaos is on the way. And a lot of times, like, now I'm not saying all these Ukrainian refugees are bad, because they're
most of them are probably just gonna be normies.
Upside to where, yeah, a lot of them are normies. Like, right. A few years ago when they started coming for work to Poland, like, a lot of them very pleasant in Warsaw. Like, I can have a beer with them at a bar, like, and that. Not a problem with that, but then you're going to get a lot of these guys from right sector who suddenly will be okay with Poland, fleeing to Poland, and they're going to be sitting around bored, and I wouldn't be surprised if Uncle Sam or Uncle Shmuel better said, is going to start agitating them inside Poland because, of course, Uncle Shmuel thrives on chaos.
Yeah, it's Uncle C-Sam.
Even within Uncle C-Sam, exactly.
Yeah, Uncle C-Sam, yes. But, yeah, well, the thing is they're going to want to agitate them against Russia, but as usual, when you have irregular forces like this, terrorists and irregular forces, they maybe they'll just go do whatever they want. Maybe they really don't like certain figures, Polish figures, and they're going to remember the old fight between the Banderists and the Poles, and they'll be like, yeah, let's also fuck around here while we got Zog's permission. You know, it's just no good, right?
Well,
but the other thing that our friend...
At the same time, some of the, like on Telegram, I'm viewing these pro-Ukrainian channels, some of them, and it is so ghoulish, like, because the difference is, I have my differences with Russian plans. However, when Russia will announce when one of their soldiers steps out of line, a Russian soldier got caught on tape assaulting a Ukrainian woman, and he got punished. Like, it was made known that it's not going to be okay.
Right,
while
right.
Ukrainians are just doing ISIS style.
Well, they're just kneecapping
like,
people. And, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even like saying Ukrainians. I just say the Banderists are doing such ghoulish shit.
Well, those
like,
weren't even.
Kneecapping.
Now, my understanding
eyes out.
Is that those were not even actually like Azov guys or rights. Those are just regular Ukrainian forces, but they might all be sort of have this streak running through them, particularly in the eastern troops seem to be have this tendency because for whatever reasons, but yeah but
the Reddit Legion is dying out.
Well, that's gone, that's done. All the Americans that went have left, maybe except for the actual actual operators, you know what I mean? Not
right.
Guys that were like soldiers in Iraq and came out of retirement to go for another adventure and found out, oh, in this case, the other guy has the cruise missiles, not us. And it's like, I'm out. You know,
yeah.
It's like actual black ops peoples and stuff like that, I'm sure, operating on the ground.
There was another hilarious article this week about how they didn't, maybe you saw it, maybe you guys commented on it. I didn't listen to the whole, everything you did this week, but there was one, where they were talking about like the rude awakening, and it was this like boomer American who he went to go and then he saw they were unprofessional. So he started like a nonprofit instead to collect money for Ukraine. And it was just funny. It was just one of those stories where it's like, oh yeah, you know, better instead I'll stay here and collect money.
I was running an NGO.
yeah. I'll run an NGO. Exactly.
Right. Right.
It was
yeah.
really, really
but,
funny article.
One thing, our buddy, we had a buddy who was on the third rail, Polish guy. I don't know if you know him or not.
Mozart.
Yeah. He's a fan of Konfederacja. And he's been saying like, you know, the Konfederacja have been warning, like, look, their slogans like yes to refugees, no to privileges. Cause they're like, if we give these Ukrainians like permanent privileges, they're going to stay. And what he's afraid of is that, you know, Poland has maintained a certain amount of ethnic integrity. And this is sort of like the thin end of the wedge for multiculturalism.
Right.
And that from after this, it's like, it starts with white refugees and it's going to very quickly stop being white refugees.
Oh, they're already starting with that's what all this whole slate of articles about. Oh, well, look at this. Suddenly these countries that are willing to take in brown refugees. They have been doing it for weeks. But what I've been predicting with this, Jazz and I were talking about it, is that they are going to absolutely, after this is over, be like, well, now wait a minute, you took in all these people, what about these Africans that are arriving on your shores right now? You know,
explain,
I mean, that's
the difference to me.
Yeah, that's they are for sure they are going to leverage this. Every country that took in Ukrainian refugees, particularly like Hungary and Poland, in the coming years,
those are the ones they want to get in. They want to get.
Yes,
they want to break.
And they're going
to
set that precedent. They're going to be like, well, now you can't say that you're just closing your country's closed immigration, or that you can't afford refugees,
well,
or whatever.
What's interesting with this war right now is Zog opened up a second front, and it's not talked about much, but they reignited. And y'all remember for sure the Artsakh conflict, Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
Well, the Azeris just started, like, Azeris went full retard and just started shelling, like, civilian areas within
Stepanakert. I thought the Iranians put the kibosh on that, though. I thought they shut that down.
Well, the Iranians basically told them, like, if you continue this, we're going to attack. But the problem is also that Azerbaijan's government, like, as much as I hate Ilham Aliyev, I will say this, that he knows how to, like, play in a way a multi-vector foreign policy.
Mm.
Because while signing deals with Russia, he is also able to maintain, like, receive Israeli arms shipments.
Israel is clearly on the Azerbaijan is clearly one of their puppets. And Israel's stance towards Russia is interesting. They don't take an aggressive stance toward them. I think there's two reasons for that. One is because, as everybody has well talked about, the Dolan Heights, yes, the presence of essentially the Russian army on their border, which in the Jewish press in Israel, they freak out about how there's this empire that they don't totally control, that they don't control it. And it's on their border. And the other reason is, if Russia emerges from this conflict, they have to hedge their bets. If Russia emerges from this conflict stronger, and yes, they've been playing their cards incredibly well, Israel cannot afford to have made inveterate enemies of Russia.
Well, Israel will totally do this. I just saw a fantastic video on the Suez Crisis. It was amazing. It was just put out on YouTube on Epic History TV. And it's amazing to me the way Israel will do the thing where it's like we expect America to be unconditionally supportive of Israel, our greatest ally and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, like, that. It's not reciprocal. Israel will totally do what's in Israel's interest and tell the United States to fuck off.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, in fact, this conflict, because of their, that stuff used to get waved off, but this with Russia, I think it makes America and really, you know, Jews in America, American Jews, they feel an existential threat to their world order, which they also see as protecting Israel, and the Israelis actually have a bit of a different view of it, and so there's actually, see, I wouldn't assume that the Israeli government has the same assumptions as, like, Anthony Blinken. I think there's actually quite a bit of static there between these viewpoints. And so they're getting frustrated with each other. Now, they're all ultimately Jews, as we know. But, you know, for somebody like Anthony Blinken, the United States is necessary. For somebody like Naftali Bennett, he's like, well, the United States is necessary, but if Russia owns the United States in this conflict, like, I still have to be friends with them too. You got to understand that. And Blinken's like, no, you've got to. The other thing that Jews like Anthony Blinken and just Jews in America are worried about is how it looks. Because if everybody is waving the Ukrainian flag and rah, 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 go Ukraine, and Israel's like, well, we're not really going to take a stand here. How do you explain that to non-Jews in America? What do you say to them?
Did you read the article that the few Ukrainians that Israel took in, the women were right away propositioned with prostitution.
Oh yeah, they're immediately
the second,
like,
they landed in Tel Aviv.
Well, there were these right wing parties in Israel that were, like, wanting to DNA test them and were complaining they weren't Jewish enough, or they were faking being Jewish.
You know what really sucks about RT being blocked in the West? Hmm. I wanted to hear Zhirinovsky's take on all of this.
Oh yeah.
Like, He's the only Jewish comedian. He is the Jewish comedian who should run Ukraine. If they're going to have a Jewish comedian, let it be Zhirinovsky.
Well, yeah. No, he should just, yes. Yes. They should give him Ukraine. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, I think the real problem for Poland here is that I think there's a libtard class in Poland that's ascendant, that really wants to go pro-West and wants to do all of the trappings of being part of the gay, and they're flexing against Russia, and it's like, that's kind of not really that smart, because in fact, you don't, if there's a war, like, Poland, frankly, it's gonna get fucked again.
Oh, just the troops in Kaliningrad, or Königsberg, or Krulevitz.
Yeah, whatever
way you
want
to say it. They can. There's a garrison of 40,000 Russian troops stationed up there, and there was a map showed where the S-400s and the Grads can reach.
Yeah.
And within a short time, Poland would be obliterated, and most Polish nationalists are very aware of this. And now, even within the Polish libtard class, you have kind of a little libtard slap fight going on, because there are some libtards, like the type like my mom, who are just like seeing that this is going too far, this saber rattling. And then you have especially the Zoomer libtards, who are all on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because they don't understand the real world, frankly.
Yeah.
They're detached
from reality. A lot of the Zoomer libtards, they are a lot of them don't even live in Poland proper. A lot of them work in Germany or work in England, and they come back to Poland and they are suddenly so enlightened. And they're not learning the Polish lesson don't depend on allies, because Poland is notorious for trusting
America, trusting the UK, trusting
the Anglosphere.
Yeah, trusting English, the eternal English speaker. that's the other thing, is that it's obvious that you can't trust these people. The UK showed it in World War II and in the Great War. The US has showed it since the end of World War II. Can't be trusted.
And a lot of the libtards now are trying to invoke the name of Pilsudski.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tell them, I'm like, we don't have men of that caliber around.
Yeah, Pilsudski was not a libtard.
No.
No.
He played his cards right. I mean, the fact that he was able to use the Central Powers to his own interest and then gain Polish independence, that's a genius political
move.
Smart, we don't have people around like that.
Right.
While, the problem right now is that, libtards are, I don't know, you're getting the two classes of libtards. You're getting the bloodthirsty, psychotic ones who just want a war because they think Daddy NATO will come to protect them. And then you're getting the boomer libtards who were just saying, hey,
even if Daddy NATO came to protect, Poland would be wrecked. I don't think, maybe not a, it would be hurt the most. Even if NATO came into the fight, even if America came into the fight, the battleground's gonna be Poland. It's gonna look like Mariupol.
And what kind of protection is America giving? Are they giving Sergeant Shaniqua Williams, who suddenly will throw a fit because her weave fell off from the fucking air blast?
Because she needs her service animal.
Grad missile that fell.
Yeah, you're going to get a bunch of trannies that need service animals for emotional support.
Well,
the American bases in Poland already, they have limited ability to go out in town because Poles they ended up getting the shit beat out of them by locals.
Right. I was going to say, I thought that was where the gay pride parades would be organized, but yeah. Anyway, yeah. Warren, you had something?
No. Nothing particularly on this. I will say one thing that you both could comment on. Apparently, just now, Stryker posted this. The domain was suspended by order of the European Commission of Nordfront.se. So the Nordic Resistance Movement just had their website suspended.
Just stolen from them.
By Europol, Court of Justice of the European Union. And that's what comes up on their page if you click on it.
And what did Nordfront ever do, to deserve?
Yeah, well, and their position, their statement, Simon Lindbergh's statement on this conflict in Ukraine was incredibly measured. It was very, because they have a lot of contacts, I guess, friends all over Eastern Europe, some people in Ukraine.
Right.
It was
a
very measured, very, very reasonable statement, common sense. I mean, why did this happen right now? I think because there's a lot of things right now. You saw this did you see the anti-lynching, statute that Biden just signed into law?
Yes.
Yeah.
Blacks are finally safe, guys.
Right. Well, no, I mean, this is the thing. We can joke about it, and it's very funny, but it's not that funny, because under the statute, would what happened to DeAndre Harris be considered a lynching? I think it would.
Yes.
I think it would. It would actually. Those guys would be facing 30-year sentences in hate crimes.
100%.
Yes. And who knows? It might also apply.
It's literally the anti-self-defense against blacks bill.
Yeah. It's while this crime is reaching some kind of new peak.
While niggers are going insane, crazy, doing crime so bad, the FBI finally did what we always wondered if they do, which was start to obfuscate their statistics so we couldn't see it.
Yes.
They do this.
Yes. So while all this is going on, they sign into law basically the anti-vigilante justice bill. It's like if the cops were locking the cops up, we're locking the judge, the prosecutor up in the case of the McMichaels, we're locking up everybody, putting the George Soros prosecutors in. But if you defend yourself, that's a lynching. Vigilante justice, and now there's an anti-lynching law.
This whole system, as we said in our NJP statement but we all stand behind it. This first statement I released, they're gonna get mad about their inability to control certain events because Russia has power. Russia has a lot of power. They have military power. They've got state power. They've got commercial economic power. And they can tell the West, the Jiao, they can tell the Jewish occupied West to fuck off. And they can do things. And the impotence and rage they're going to feel is going to be taken out on us.
Taken out on us.
Already why they're setting up on it. And now my thing is on some level, it's inevitable. So whatever. It's inevitable. So it has to happen.
Stop being mad about it. Yeah.
No, we have to be mad about it. But, we also understand that we have to face it. There's nothing we can do to make it not happen.
Right.
So
this domain suspension of Nord Front falls under that category.
Yes,
in nice Israeli colors. Thank you, European Union. Commission. Blue and black, or blue and white rather. The colors. But for them to be talking about democracy and authority. Did you see Ann Applebaum's article? I heard you guys talking about her on Strike on Mike.
Oh, yeah,
she just wrote an article today in the Atlantic, where she says that we got to be preparing for war, and that liberalism is not, free, and the democracies, the free people of the West, if we want to preserve freedom and all this and human rights, we got to treat it like the Cold War is back on. I mean, it was just like a raging, insane neoconservative
concept.
Freedom for what? Freedom for kosher pinworms?
Yes.
Yeah.
Any concept that the Jiao is more free than Russia is out the fucking window. As we've said, all systems will repress those which are actually a threat to them. The difference is how legitimate is that system. Now, one of the ways that you can judge how legitimate a government is how honest they can be about who they're oppressing and why.
That's a good point.
Right now,
they're legitimate. They don't have to lie.
They don't have to hide it. They can say, yes, we oppress this type of person because they're bad for all of you. And the people will be like, yes, thank you.
Right.
And so, for the problem is the Jewish occupied West, who are they oppressing? They're oppressing their white populations, the overwhelming majority.
Yes.
And they're oppressing them because it's good for them.
Right. So there's no,
and they don't want to, as we were talking about before, they don't want to tell you who they are and whether, those conversations were private. I can't tell you who I was talking to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Those were private conversations. Right. So that's the thing.
Liar, liar when he says objection and he says, what for? He says, cause it's devastating to my case.
Yes, exactly.
Cause he can't tell a lie.
I object to this evidence
because everything they say is true. So we got to shut them down because we're speaking the truth.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah. Hey, we got to get to other callers, Z, but thanks for all the insights.
Thanks,
into everything.
I bid you gentlemen a good evening in Serbian to you, Mike, laku noć, and in Hungarian to you, Warren.
All right.
He speaks better Hungarian than I do.
All right. Talk to you later. Okay, so we've got, speaking of that, we actually have somebody, Jeff wants to talk about the McMichaels, something even I don't think we've covered enough. We've tried to cover it more than others, but I think we haven't even been somewhat remiss. What's up, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. I'm already mad.
Hey. Hey, Mike and Warren. Nice to see you guys again. I've been a pretty big prison advocate for a while now. I've been writing prisoners. Warren, if you check your DMs on certain apps, you'll find a picture of a postcard I got from Greg McMichael. I can't read it this minute, but
I got about a hundred unread conversations, man. Yours was one of the ones I got to check. I will get to, you know what? I'll get to it tomorrow. I'm going to go through all my stuff tomorrow.
The sad thing is right now is the McMichaels are in a prison in Georgia that has a pretty massive restriction. They don't allow anything but unstamped postcards. Like, you can't even put a stamp on it. You got to have a postage metered from, like, the post office or something. Mm. And so to contact them is really hard, but we need to do it.
Okay, yeah. So did you – what did Greg McMichael say to you? I mean, can you reveal that to people, or do you feel comfortable telling people, or what?
Yeah, I got it pulled up. Hang on. Let me zoom in real quick. From Greg McMichael, God bless you for your recent postcard. It is difficult to keep myself from losing it in here. Your card gives me hope with the knowledge that others see the injustice that has taken place and praying for us. My wife and others have set up some kind of internet site. It's McMichaelTrial.com. I'm not sure what's on it. I haven't seen it. Our next court appearance is before the federal judge for sentencing. Pray that God's will is done. God bless you.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. That really upsets me, man.
Yeah, man.
I at least hope that they can have some kind of humane conditions, that they're not subjected to the other prisoners. I mean, a prison in Georgia, can you imagine what that population looks like? I mean, come on now. Like, somebody was saying to me they might even want to get convicted of the hate crimes to go to a federal prison just to not be in a Georgia State penitentiary because they're going to be there for life unless we get power and we can get them out. But, you know, it's like, it might be better to go to a federal penitentiary than the Georgia State Prison, which is basically all blacks. I assume. I'm making an assumption
Yeah, I don't know the state of that prison, but this prison they're in, they can only receive postcards, which is absurd. Like, even like 400-year sentences, people have better rights than these people, which is tragic.
How do people send them a postcard? Like, where is this? Is this information posted somewhere publicly?
Yes. If you look up, there are several ways to get, look up a prisoner. Bureau of Prisons has the federal prisoners listed. And then if you go to Georgia State Inmate Lookup, if you look up that and go to their government website, you can type in Greg McMichael, Travis McMichael, and the camera guy, I'm brain farting on his name right now, but you can look up their addresses, but you'll also need to get a postcard with a pre-stamped postage on it. So it's a work, but we need to do it
for them. Yeah. Yes, people should be always doing this. Does I think maybe Parrott's Global Minority Initiative. I don't know if he's still doing that. Maybe he could post the information there too. That would be good. That's a good thing that Matt Parrott is doing. That I agree with.
Do you know, caller, if he's done that, if on the Global Minority Initiative, if McMichael's stuff is listed there?
I don't think they're on that yet.
Get Parrott to put it up there.
Yeah, GMI is a little out of date on some of their addresses, so be a little cautious when you use them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, do you know better?
Do you have a Telegram channel, brother? I mean, a public one?
Not yet, but I probably should make one. It wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, because if you can put that out, we can share it.
We'll share it.
Because I don't know all the stuff myself.
I need to get just a pamphlet or some kind of document to get people oriented on how to do it and what to look up and how to find people, because it's a little clunky and the prisons move everyone around a lot.
Yes,
right.
There's a lot of gang war behind the scenes that we can't do much about.
Well,
but,
they could do something about
it.
And the fact that our people, when they go to jail, have to be subjected to it when we don't cause that shit. Our people, political prisoners, have to worry about that shit.
What they did to the McMichaels is worse, in my opinion, than it's worse than a death sentence. It's worse than a death sentence. And again, it's what this system, this system lacks exactly what you said, Mike. This system lacks the legitimacy to be able to do that, even though they would want to do that. If this were the Soviet Union, those guys would be executed along with us and everybody else that's a dissident, you know, or that gets on the wrong side, commits what they consider a politically incorrect crime. But they instead, it's this process stick them away forever. I mean, life without parole.
No hope of getting out ever.
No hope ever. The father and son. I mean, you know, it's funny. I think of me and my dad.
Did they at least let them be together in the jail? Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, I think of me and my dad because, you know, we've been in no situation like that. But I know if there was like a criminal, you know, a burglar or something, you know, my dad would spring into action and I'd be right there with him. You know what I mean? And it's like they clearly are close as father and son. And it's like, when
they probably separated them to be cruel. Like they could give them, could let them sell together, right? Why not?
Yeah. I mean, that story, and there are other, you know, there are things that have happened in the last year that are just as bad, if not worse. But the cruelty of this system with that story is just incredible. Brother, you are doing the Lord's work.
Yeah,
thank you so much for writing
it,
to him.
Really.
For, you know, it's something we all need to make the time to do it. And please, people listening to this, send these
and
guys.
And what's
look
even
up what,
worse, the reason that our system can be this cruel is because they feel, on some level, they feel righteous doing it. Like, this is the problem, is that these people feel righteous. Cause you can't just be capricious to somebody. You have to feel justified in doing it. And that makes it even more dangerous for us. Because these people that are wielding power, it's not like they're just cynically, you know, okay, you're a problem for the power system. So, no, they actually feel, like, and I guess that's probably the case anywhere. I'm sure that happened in the Soviet Union. I'm sure it's happened in every totalitarian system. The aggrieved ruling class, you know?
Right.
Like the nothing.
Well,
I'll
tell you, Mike.
The enraged bourgeoisie. This is actually the enraged bourgeoisie. Like, you know how Marxists used to say that fascism was this liberalism is the enraged bourgeoisie.
I'll tell you something else about it, though. Emily and I we had a big conversation about a week ago about war and peace and about the morality of war and just what's going on in Ukraine and what's happened throughout history. We were talking about Yugoslavia, and when we were doing the piece on Madeleine Albright, in the course of this conversation, I reminded Emily of this quote by Hitler that I love, where he says, "The German people, we're not a warlike people, but we are a soldierly people." And I thought about that, and I said to her, you know, it is possible to be soldierly without being warlike. And then I thought of Madeleine Albright and I realized it's
the
possible
opposite
to be
possible.
Warlike without being soldierly, you know?
Right.
And
yeah.
That's, I think, a big part of the cruelty of this system and the lack of just honesty. It is a fundamentally unmanly system. It is a fundamentally dishonorable, just the people running it. It's not, I mean, even like even guys in the Cold War, like Khrushchev. I mean, Khrushchev was like Stalin's right hand during World War II, and Kennedy was a soldier, you know, and so when these guys were facing off during the Cold War, I just watched, Dad asked me to watch with him, and it was very interesting, a documentary on the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of brought me up to speed on that. And it's amazing how honestly Kennedy spoke compared to politicians today, the sort of mm-hmm. weasel words, the way the passive aggressive language that politicians use.
They can't tell you what's going on.
They can't tell you what's going on. Yeah. And it's just, yes. So I think that's a lot of the cruelty of this system. It's like, it's the same kind of thing of if you've ever had like a fat, unmarried female boss in her like 50s, you know, who's just mm-hmm. like, who's just like telling you what to do. That type of person on a power trip is like the system on a power
trip.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
no,
the way
I
the
know.
Jews are on a power trip.
And
you know
worst,
what I'm talking
and
about.
And the worst part of it is also that when they do things, They pretend like they try and gaslight, like, you're the crazy one for thinking we're up to no good. Like, that's kind of what, like, guys like Destiny do that. Like, they just pretend like you're insane. I remember when I talked to that guy, he was saying, and I talked about lobbies, corporate lobbying and stuff, and he pretended like I was a nut for thinking there was any corruption that went on there. Like, yes. I was just, you just, that's crazy. He's like, I'm so tired of hearing this from people. This is what everybody says. Like, you guys are just crazy. You don't know that. You've never seen that. You have no, I'm like, are you kidding me? And, it's just, and so, like, they basically sit there utterly lying to you and pretending like you're the crazy one. And it does take a toll. It does take its toll. And you wonder, and my thing is, I remain confident that other people see it too.
Oh, they do.
I remain utterly confident that other people see it too. And we're not the only ones that see it. So anyway, thanks for what you're doing, Jeff.
Yeah. Jeff, if you write all the information. Let me just say, if you write up all the information on for like a public, I will share it on my channel. Mike will share it. How do people can get in contact with these guys? I'll say to the listeners, you know, if you write to one of these political prisoners and you get something back from them, that is like an artifact you will treasure for the rest of your life. I mean, you did your good deed for the month. That's a great thing to do. A lot of people don't even have the balls to do that. And the other thing I'll just say to everybody else, it's like when you think about what you're doing for this cause, for this movement, sacrifices you're making, think about those guys that the same day you had, they had on the inside. That goes, guys, in a Georgia prison. And it's just think, are you doing enough? Are you doing enough in your daily life? Think of what those guys are dealing with right now, today, you know? Anyway, go ahead. What were you going to say?
And the McMichaels are on one of the most extreme cases we've ever seen in a very long time. On the lighter note, I've talked to some of the January 6th prisoners and some of the older Charlottesville people that got involved with whatever little miscreants that they charged for Charlottesville. Those people are slowly trickling out back into the system. So now is the time for our listeners, our people, to connect with them, network with them, try to get them something set up wherever they are, depending on wherever they get released at, so that they have something to do. Because if we don't start taking care of our prisoners, eventually they'll just become either homeless, get lost, disappear, or do something even more stupid and make us all embarrassed.
So
I guess that is on a lighter note. That's barely lighter, but you know. But no, it's a very good point. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Thank you. I'll be writing it up and sharing when I can. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
God bless. Have a good night.
Yep. Talk to you later. See ya. All right. So, that was pretty heavy. But, definitely we have to, the McMichaels case just fills me with rage and sorrow because it is so awful.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was talking about Kyle Rittenhouse and that was great, but I mean, the McMichaels was just crazy. And
the way conservatives won't touch that. The way.
Were worse about it.
Yes. Yeah. That's like the most,
because they got a chance to prove that they're not racist. That judge was a Republican appointee.
Somebody posted, in the comments, Mike, an article, a local Wisconsin article saying that a group had hung a racist banner in downtown Waukesha. And there's the line. This is the line on this WISN. This was March 21st. The line, they said that, in the wake of the Waukesha police or parade, here's the line. In the wake of the Waukesha parade tragedy, police said they've seen a disturbing undercurrent, an erroneous notion the crime was racially motivated.
Erroneous? So
an erroneous. In the wake of the Waukesha parade tragedy, the police have noticed a disturbing undercurrent, an erroneous notion the crime was racially motivated. I mean, this happened.
So why do the police care what people think about it?
Yeah.
Why is it their business?
Yeah. I mean, that's.
Is it against the law to think that? No. Okay. Yeah. What's your problem then, cop?
Right. Right. We can't ever.
Why are police monitoring people's double standards? Why are police monitoring people's viewpoints?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Shouldn't you be monitoring?
Why is that disturbing? I mean, how about the dead kids and dead grandmothers?
What about like the erroneous notions in Daryl Brooks's head? What about the erroneous notions of Black Lives Matter? Like, what are you worried about with this erroneous? Like, what's even going to happen? Oh, people.
Right. That's disturbing. A disturbing undercurrent. Oh, we wouldn't want those police officers.
Who
does
it disturb? Who does it disturb?
It's disturbing them. It's disturbing
it's
the black.
Disturbing the Jews.
Yeah.
Frankly, that's who it is. It's the same answer that Carter Walker gave me when I finally got him to tell me who asked him to do the story. It was, the Jewish community was very grateful. Oh, the Jewish community is very disturbed by this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway, let's, so this guy's saying he's got an interesting opinion on Ukraine. So brace yourselves.
Okay.
What's up? So what's going on?
Hey, what's up? Can you hear me?
Sort of, yeah.
So I'll keep it quick. My basic idea is that it's a rhetorical point that if now what we're seeing right now, whether or not you believe the propaganda or not from both sides, is borders being withdrawn or redrawn along the purpose of a racial reunification.
Right.
And if that could happen in a modern state, then who's to say another Holocaust can't happen? Since what's stopping Americans from breaking up this country and forming a fascist union?
Okay. I mean, I think, well, yeah, I mean, what's stopping us is, what's stopping whites from taking power and making any change one way or the other in America is not what anybody thinks or not. It's just the lack of political power and organization. So that's the facts. Like, you know, it's like politics aren't necessarily logical, right? So I think this is it's like, well, hey, it would be a logical thing for it to be like this. So why isn't it? Well, it's not like that because the people in power don't want it that way. So if you want it that way, you got to take power. That's what it comes down to. Vladimir Putin decided he wanted to Anschluss with those territories, Russian-speaking territories of Ukraine, and he put tanks and guns, artillery fire, and jet planes behind it. So it's happening. There you go.
Yeah.
You know?
I understand all that. I've been listening to the network since, like, Episode 94, 95
Oh, wow.
FTN. I get all that. It's more a rhetorical point that I thought of at the beginning of all this for the lay person that, you know, I mean, they're on the fence about things. And so, well, here's an opportunity to get more people on our side and make that happen. Like it fucking should have.
Yeah. Well, here's a way I think that a way to put this sort of point to somebody, which is that a lot of times when you talk about foreign affairs and politics, like if you were to say to explain it to somebody, and you were to say, well, you know, what do you think? Do you think it makes more sense? You know, if there's a group that's Ukrainian speaking and a group that's Russian speaking. And they're kind of at each other's throats. They're angry at each other. There's fights going on. There's a civil war going on at one of these fault lines. Wouldn't it be easier, you know, to just sort of draw the border in a different place and then they could have peace, right? And think about the normie would be like, well, yeah, no, I think so. Right? Like what would the average person have against that, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, so then why in our country is it like, the idea of drawing borders between populations that clearly don't like each other and don't get along with each other.
Yeah.
Why can't we draw borders here? I mean, I think that's sort of the same point you're making, right? That's exactly the same point.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, you know, border, because again, but the other thing is, it's not even just the Russia thing. It goes back to World War One, because libtards used to say, can you mute? Because you got a lot of back. Sorry. That's what I call it.
Yeah,
you driving?
Shit, what's that? Work. Now I'm at a drop stop. It's the engine on this refrigerated trailer.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
But what's one of the things, you probably know what I'm talking about, Warren. One of the things libtards always talk about, at least they used to back in the anti-war days, I don't know if they do anymore, is like Sykes-Picot, right? And it'll be like,
I don't know what that is. What is that?
That's the agreement.
Post World War One agreement where they drew the borders of nations like Iraq. I believe it was the.
No, I know what. Yeah,
it was a breakup of the Middle East. It was a breakup of the Ottoman Empire. It was the way they broke up the Ottoman Empire into spheres of influence, into countries that were colonies of various European powers.
Right.
And they say, like, the thing the libtards always say is, well, look, they drew these borders with no consideration of the different ethnic and religious groups that lived in the area. So you had countries ruled by
I would argue that they did draw the borders with the interests of one very specific
of course.
Group
in
mind.
But you're absolutely right about that. But my point is that which is why they drew them with an incoherent type of population inside them so they couldn't ever consolidate as powerful states, which is, you know, and so to liberals, they will point to this and say, this is one of the reasons this, and the reason they say that is because they can blame, you know, white people for the problems in the Middle East. And it's not entirely wrong because the European powers did this so they can take some of the blame for it, right? But their point is, and I remember this going around a lot during the Iraq War and the big problems in the Middle East.
I haven't heard this in a long time, this type of argument, though.
Right.
I mean,
it kind of sucks because it's a very good argument from our perspective.
Yes.
Which is like, so you're saying that if Arabs, the racial Arabs that have a different religious viewpoint, they have a trouble living in a state together, or otherwise you'll have one minority ruling with a big majority. Like they will say, like, why does Syria have an Alawite racial ruling group when it's mostly Arab?
Right.
You know what I mean? Or I think Alawites are Arabs, but it's one tribe. But it's mostly all these other tribes. Like, oh, wait, so a minority tribe shouldn't rule then, right? So you can see where you go with it. But yeah, it's sort of funny though. And the thing is that one thing that libtards don't talk about though, is that this was done inside of Europe too, after World War One.
Czechoslovakia
doesn't make any sense.
Yugoslavia. I mean, Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia are both big.
But I mean, I know we had a Z on before. Poland. Frankly, every country surrounding Germany got a little slice of Germany.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was to keep Germany weak and to keep a bunch of potential hostile other countries all along its border,
and all united against it because if one country doesn't get a slice of Germany, then that country might be sympathetic. But if they've all got,
all got a little piece, they all got guilt, right? They're all
Everyone's shared in the guilt,
right. Exactly. So they're like, okay, we're gonna give you all a little chunk and then you're all gonna feel guilty.
Well,
so
they were made to be dysfunctional. Hitler called Czechoslovakia a powder keg, you know? It's a powder keg.
And you know what's so funny? British politicians that brought the world to the brink of war over, and then ultimately declared war over Poland. They brought the world to the brink of war over Sudetenland. They brought the world to, they almost started war. They did start it a little bit later over Poland. In 1991, after the breakup of the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, British politicians went on the floor of Parliament in Britain and said, this country doesn't make sense. We should break it up.
Yeah.
So it's like they're going to fight Germany. And of course, the reason again is because they couldn't tell you what that war was really about.
No.
Because the war was really about destroying the German nation. It wasn't about anything else. Yeah.
This video I saw on the Suez Crisis blew my mind because that was basically the
Carl, do you have anything else? Because there is a lot of background.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
No problem.
The other thing I had in mind was just a theoretical question as to whether or not in the future should it happen, whether or not we should oppose a New Deal type package given the history of what happened last time and the either the banker's plot or the business plot to overthrow Roosevelt and install General Butler as a they claim fascist dictator.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think
WTF, I love businessmen now.
No, I think that the point is that we're going to get and hey, do you have anything else? Because I can answer that question, but There's a lot of background noise, sorry.
Now, yeah, will you throw me back in the queue?
Sure.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, so I think that this is an interesting question because the there is going to be – we should actually discuss it. There's going to be some serious economic impact, and the announcement Putin made – I've actually been doing other things. I need to catch up on some of this stuff today. Western Europe is going to have problems before we are in America, but they're going to spread around to us as well. And we already have very high gas prices. You know, we're almost at $5. Where I am, it's like $4.50. I think some places it's up to $7 or $8. I don't know what it is. But they're still pretty high. Food prices are going up. I've noticed that as well. So everyone's going to get hit in the pocketbook. In America, it's not so terrible that we can't totally deal, but in Western Europe, it's going to be very bad. They're possibly going to just run out of the ability to even run some of their homes and businesses, unless they meet Putin's demands, which he doesn't seem to be backing off of. But anyway, as a result of this, it is being pondered right now to give us some kind of stipend, some government, like they gave COVID relief to give, like, high gas price relief, which of course conservatives will oppose that because they'll be like, the answer to inflation isn't to print more money. But it's like, well, the problem is this inflation isn't caused by the things you think it's caused by. It's caused by artificial shortages. So it's different, right?
Yeah.
And people also.
You think it's going to happen? Do you think there will be? I don't think there will be. I don't think they want to give out anything to anybody.
No, I don't think they will be because I think it's floated around and it might be floated around as some kind of distraction. I think though we should agitate for it though.
Oh yeah.
I think we should agitate for it because our motto is always like get this government to give you money. Always.
Yes.
It's literally fuck you, pay me. It's like when it comes to the United States government, fuck you, pay me, and then fuck you
also. We've paid enough in. I mean,
right.
We've paid enough in as a race. Yeah.
The other thing is, I have heard this. They are offering quite generous packages to get guys to go back into the, several veterans have told me that they have been contacted by the DOD and are like, we will give you big
Lloyd
money.
Austin.
Big money. Six figure dollar figures to go back into the Army or back into the Marines, with your experience and either be, and I'm just saying like, oof. And some guys are like, man, it's going to be hard for me to slap the hand away on this. And I'm like, well, you know, you make your own decision, but I don't think that we should be giving our bodies and blood to this fucking evil Army. But, if there's a way you can do it where you don't have to put your life at risk and you can just collect from them, I'd say go for it. But that's my main point is like we need to take out – if they hold out a pile of money and they want to give it to you, there's going to be strings attached. So I say grab the money pile and cut the string. You know,
like there was a 60 Minutes piece that came out on Sunday that I got to send it to you. It was about this basically the phenomenon of these large companies and international companies like not even based in the U.S. buying up all the single family homes in the U.S. and then just renting them out. And, it was an unbelievable story. I talked about it a little bit with Jazz, last night. And then, I saw a clip from Rising, where they were talking about, or no, it wasn't Rising. It was the host of the ex-host of Rising, Crystal Ball and Sagar. They have a show called Breaking Points where they were talking about it. But it's one of these issues
irritating. No,
I know. She's very
her
irritating.
Voice.
She made really good points. No, it's funny.
It's unfortunate.
The
they should
like,
have somebody less
minutes.
Annoying than her.
I know.
Make those
I know.
Points,
well, she's just, she reminds me so much of the kind of she's exactly. I know her type. In the Young Democrats in college, she would have been the type that was the little climber, the ambitious little climber. And I know people actually who worked with her on some local campaign in West Virginia briefly. She came into the state and her description of her was exactly what I thought. But the point is, it was just an interesting, it's one of these issues that, we can totally agitate on, like completely, because it's the whole, the financialization of the economy on high. I mean, it's just, it's just the Jewish money usury class making it impossible. If you don't have some extra source of wealth or intergenerational wealth, if you're a millennial or younger is what it said, because Gen Xers and on can still do it or were able to do it. You just can't buy a house. You just cannot home ownership. And this was the thing that I saw. I just saw this on her show that the average cost of a new house in America today, the average cost now averages, you know, it's not the median necessarily, but it's over $500,000, like $500,000.
Well, we've actually got a caller that I think maybe wants to talk about this. They want to talk about the food crisis. So maybe this
let's talk to our callers.
Kaylee, what's up? Is this Kaylee? Is that what it says? That's what it says in the thing. Hello? Okay. 5 seconds. If you don't talk, I gotta drop you. Okay, I don't think Kaylee is going to, something's going on. Alright, sorry Kaylee, we'll talk to you next time. Call back. So, alright, now guess what we're gonna bring in?
What?
Our good buddy Rand. What's
Hello.
Up, buddy?
Hey.
Oh, there we go.
What's up? What's going on?
This is the Mark and Warren show.
Yes. Yeast.
How we doing, boys?
Pretty good. So how are they taking everything in down under, as they say?
Oh, well, you know, it's a topic I was going to bring up with you because I know it's your favorite. Yeah, you know, all of Australia is reeling, I say, from the slap indeed heard around the world.
Oh God. Is that what they're talking about?
I knew you'd love this one, Mike.
God.
I knew you'd love this one, and I'm going to drag Warren into it. You see, Warren, I enjoyed your take on it last night on FTN so much. I was like,
what was the take?
All I remember was like spitting and like.
Can't wait to hear Mike be introduced to your hot take on the slap. And I thought, you know what? I reckon I can make it happen.
My take, Mike, was basically that I was annoyed that I had to like hit the little skip 5 second thing repeatedly when I was listening to TDS this week, to get past this talking about the slap.
Well, you and me both, my friend. You and me both. You could tell I was not interested. You could tell how disinterested I was. People are putting memes out about it even. About how totally I was like, why are we even, like, what the, like, what, who fucking cares? Like, my take is niggers and Hollywood. And when you get those two in combination, if you're talking about it, you are inherently wasting your time.
You're losing.
You're losing. When you talk about nigger Hollywood celebrities, you literally might as well throw yourself off of a bridge.
What Jess said was that it's an interesting indication that maybe that they are losing, NATO is losing, that their thing in Ukraine is not going the way they've been telling everybody it's been going, and they're eager to change the subject.
Well, I honestly thought about that for a second, but I was like, I think maybe that's overthinking it. What I really was like, what they're really losing is ratings.
Yeah.
So they're just going to turn it into pro wrestling to get people to watch. That's what I think.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
So do you have anything important to talk about, Rand?
Well, no, I thought you might want to actually ponder the way Jazzy put it, because like Warren, you guys went over that article that I think was trying to push back on the current narrative on the Ukraine. And remember that they stacked up one headline after another as like the intro to their thing. And it was like, Putin's crazy. He's insane.
Yes.
The Ukrainians are, you know, just laying siege to Moscow as we speak.
Right.
The Russian speaking Ukrainians aren't welcoming the truth. And it's just, it was this never ending cavalcade of bullshit. It was a complete inversion of reality.
Mm.
And, and then we get the, Rock'em Sock'em Zogbots. You will be humiliated when my Negro slaps your Negro.
Right.
And you guys went into it with some like.
I could see the media. I could see the media
in full sincerity.
Yes.
They're covering it. They're going, oh my God, this changes everything. One Negro slapping another before God and everyone.
Like, I could see the media doing this. I could absolutely see, but I wouldn't go so far as to say like, oh, this was done. This whole thing, it was all set up for that purpose.
Oh no, no.
But I
no,
could
like
see the media absolutely focusing on it as a way of having a news cycle that's not about how badly, the Ukraine thing is really going.
Yeah,
I could see that.
Well, they just need a pause in the coverage because it's been constant, you know, like you said.
Their problem is
storming the gates of Moscow.
They're also going to need to wind coverage down before they break it to everybody that Russia won the war.
Yes, exactly. That's really what I'm
because
thinking.
Because they can't have people in this hyper mode and then have to tell them suddenly break it to them like that reality has actually checked this and now Russia has won. So they kind of want... I think they want people that have been hyped up on Zelenskyism. And I've even noticed, have you noticed this? Have you noticed that the ball fanning of Zelensky has really stopped in the last couple of weeks? I have noticed that the press, the adoring.
I mean, maybe in the last like week.
I've noticed maybe a week.
Wait,
and
it's not cool anymore. My body pillow hasn't even arrived in the mail yet.
Right. Yeah. Well, see, that's a problem when these things are on back order. Like, you know, there's so many Zelensky body pillows on back order. Plus the fact that he has to sweat on every single one of them before they get sent out, which does create a bottleneck in the production process. So
that is the worst part about my location. You know,
yeah, and
I
it's gonna be yeah, it's gonna be so long
onto some sort of cool celebrity. By the time the merch has arrived,
the celebrity's not cool anymore, man. Because the cycle moves so fast. By the time Australia gets their newest celebrity merch, that celebrity's already cringe. That, you know, to like them.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you know how much I paid for this pair of boots that leaves an impression of Zelensky's face in the soil as I hike?
Yeah, no, it's really, I've noticed that. You know what for me it was? It was that when he did the obvious green screen video where, now people were saying he's doing green screen videos, but I was looking at the first videos he was doing from Kiev. I was like, I don't know, those look real. Like he's outside, the wind's blowing, stuff is moving in the background. It doesn't appear like he's in some way separate from his background. Now they could have been pre-recorded or they could have been something else. So maybe they were just exactly what they pretended to be. It doesn't really affect my viewpoint one way or the other. But when he did that so clear, obviously green, nothing, no wind blowing, nothing moving, total, and he doesn't, you know, no shot. It was so, everybody knows what I'm talking about, right? It was, anybody can see.
Is that the one where he's wearing a green t-shirt that came straight out of the box and he's saying, when Malcolm X had a dream, his dream was NATO fighter jets roaring across the Ukraine, firing rockets.
I don't know if he said that, but yes, he's always wearing the olive drab. But he was in front of like kind of a night scene of Kiev, and it was obviously a green screen. Everyone has seen it. It's not a conspiracy. It just so clearly is. And nobody even refuted the media in the U.S. didn't try to refute it. They just said they never showed it, and they just said what he said in the video. And I noticed that since that happened, which was a couple weeks ago now, the real ball fanning of Zelensky seems to have been winding down. Also, because Zelensky, what more can he do?
Fucking embarrassing. Like the media can't admit it, the politicians can't admit it, but that was universally panned. Like even I couldn't. It didn't get back to me that anyone in any real people in even the Reddit, you know, the international, you know, tranny Reddit unicorn brigade people were like super excited by Zelensky's incredibly painful address to Congress. And,
right.
You know, so
exactly.
Time
that,
to,
that
you know,
didn't,
time to put
I
that
was,
back in the toy box.
I thought that was going to be a moment of just like unbearable cringe and people going crazy. But I remember we were watching it and when they stood to give their standing ovation, some old geezer sitting next to Nancy Pelosi had fallen asleep and she had to wake him up. And I was dying laughing at that. So it wasn't even that speech did go over like a lead balloon. And then he went to Israel and he started saying, this is like the Holocaust. And then they told him, yeah, you shut the fuck up. So like Israel literally said to this guy, thank you for sharing your feelings. I mean, can you imagine a friend of mine who actually had spent some time in Palestine doing activism for the Palestinians and thus had a lot of experience with Israel said, for an Israeli to disagree with you and just be dismissive and not yell back in your face, like get really aggressive yelling in your face, he's like the deepest insult. So for them to sort of be passive aggressive is like a deep insult. Usually Israelis get up in your face and scream at you when they're mad. So yeah.
This usually doesn't happen. Like Zelensky is Jewish. But they seem to be like trying to stay at least one broom handle's length from him. And, usually it's like every Jew's sacred right to bring up the sixth infinity. But, Zelensky.
The problem is.
I don't know. What's the deal?
The problem is. He's not using it right. He's suggesting that something that's happened.
I thought
happening.
This was a key that opened all locks, though.
Not really. It's,
like,
it's
you
a
know,
key.
If you have to wait so long in
make
a
this
line
mistake
at the
all the
ATM,
time.
Yeah, he made the same mistake.
Yeah,
he made the same mistake.
You know, the mask. They're making me wear a mask. I'm just like the Jews at Auschwitz.
Right, right,
they,
right.
What
right,
do they
right.
say? You anti-Semite, you Nazi.
No, they can't say
that.
They can't say that.
Yeah.
They can't say that to Zelensky.
I did see Jews use that though. I did see like, you know how you get your fake right Jews. Like you know, there was like Rabbi Shlomo Cohen.
Yes, yes, let me be clear. So
as far
Jews,
as I'm aware, there might actually be a real Rabbi Shlomo Cohen.
No, there is. Like, there's, I'm sure there's a rabbi. I'm sure there's several. I'm sure there's several of them. But the Jews that are not, like just Jews in New York or wherever or some, you know, just around in Europe or, you know, whatever, they can, I'm sure they can go out and bloviate what this is. Ukraine, this is like World War II.
Oh, the Orthodox New York Jews were able to bring up the Holocaust with COVID restrictions.
Right, right. Well, they were allowed to do it. Right. Now, the problem was Zelensky was going to Israel and saying it and hoping to get something out of them that they didn't want to do with it. And they didn't want to do it because, like I said, Russia has them in a very difficult position internationally. Yeah. And like
they want to keep their options open. I mean, they see no reason.
They
I mean, that's the whole point.
Why tie themselves down?
The whole point of having the U.S. fight their proxy wars for them. It's just like with Saddam Hussein. I mean, look, let's just go to that. We all know Saddam Hussein was an enemy of Israel. We all know that the Israel felt threatened by Saddam Hussein's existence and by his presence. We all know that they had problems in the past. So the question is, if they're our greatest ally, why weren't they joining us the same way that, you know, Romania and Hungary and all
these other
countries joined Hitler when he invaded the Soviet
Union? I remember the quote from the time.
What was it?
You know, like, you're there, like, literally, like, you know, killing all their civilians, blowing away their troops, firing depleted uranium shells all around the joint. But why didn't the Israeli troops go, oh, it would that would inflame tensions in the region?
Yeah, well, the U.S. gave them defensive weapons. Yeah, the U.S. gave them – I remember. The U.S., like, gave them in as part of their one big Iraq war budget thing. They just gave a bunch of money to Israel to, like, here, buff up your defenses, you know, so that when we go clean up your mess in Iraq for you, you feel extra safe. The Israelis just, yeah, they're not, the whole point of having the U.S. and NATO and all this stuff fight, doing their business for them in Russia,
is so they don't have to get
their hands dirty. Yes,
so exactly. When you ask them to get involved, they're like, get the fuck out of here.
Yes, exactly.
What are you, crazy? That's why they're mad at Zelensky. And he just got a little bit ahead of himself. He's like the number one hero in Western Europe, in the media, and in America. And Jews are the ones doing that. That's the other thing. The Jewish media, the international JAW media, the Jewish Occupied West media. I'm going to keep using that, the JAW. I really like that. The JAW media is, amping him up.
Hey,
so
Sean Hannity recently, he's got JAWs.
Yes,
all right.
He's the JAWler. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't get any more JAWly than Sean Hannity.
So, Was it? He stores the bloviation in the double chin. The bloviation is stored in the double chin. That's great. I love that.
You know, like bullfrogs. You know, like just that double chin of his, just like expanding outwards as he talks about.
Yeah, the more like jingoistic.
When Putin fires 5,000 ICBMs at the Ukraine.
Yeah, the more like jingoistic bloviation he does, the bigger the double chin expands. But like, but yeah, like, so they're the ones doing that for Zelensky. And so his balls are like, he thinks they're like huge, and he walks into Israel and they're like, yeah, thanks for sharing. Bye.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for sharing.
That's an interesting opinion you've got. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, like,
I'm sorry that you feel that way.
That's interesting. Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's nice. So see you later. Yeah, so that's, yes, the point. And the funny thing is, Israel.
Israel officially say, I acknowledge your post, but I'm not giving you a thumbs up.
I see what you're saying. I understand it. But, the funny thing is that, Israel pretended like they weren't even involved in the Iraq war. And this is where they started.
Yes.
Literally asked the U.S. to start the war, and then like, yeah, but that's not our problem. You guys did that. And I even saw some Jews, when it started going south, some Jewish commentators talking about how dumb the United States is.
Yes, I did.
And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
I remember that.
So my question is this. It's like smaller nations are learning not to trust America. Will America learn not to trust Jews?
No.
Because the whole reason the world doesn't trust us is because, like, Israel treats America the way America treats the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And so it's like at some point, which not really, because we don't like bomb and, well, they do occupy us. They do control our media.
But and they bombed us before. They actually have bombed our men on the ships. Yeah.
And they've stolen nuclear materials from us. They've killed our citizens.
Yeah.
And it's absurd. And, the other thing with Iraq is it wasn't just Saddam Hussein. It was that they didn't like him and he was weak. They weakened him with sanctions and they wanted to just put a big fat problem in the middle of the Middle East. They wanted to just use it, so they break it up. They wanted to create a democracy. I think they might have. They might have had that idea. But more so, I think it was like, okay, we're gonna break this up. It's going to fucking, the civil war we're gonna create is going to expand to every one of these countries. So like, either we can create, it's a win-win, right? For them. From the Jewish perspective, it was a win-win. From America's perspective, it was a lose-lose. From the Jewish perspective, it was a win-win.
Hang on, what is the difference, if any, between an Arab democracy and a civil war?
That's what it is. Like, in the Middle East, democracy means civil war. However, it doesn't necessarily have to. And I also don't think that Arabs necessarily have to have the same kind of democracies that we have with, like, regular, maybe they vote for a guy and he's president for life or something. I mean, it doesn't really matter that much, but like, right. Whatever. I mean, who cares, right?
Bashar Assad has legitimacy, right? What sort of memes do we get from an Arab parliament? We've already seen African parliaments, and it is absolutely hilarious that, African political parties do double duty as a, boxing match.
Yeah, well, I think you can see some of that stuff in the Middle East.
Throwing the fucking chairs across the room.
Typically, in the Middle East, you have a strong man that has a parliament that is just a rubber stamp. Like, that's what they've got in Egypt and Jordan and stuff like that. They just rubber stamp what the dictator wants, so, yeah.
By the way, speaking of Israel, this was something that I haven't heard anybody talk about it. I don't know if you saw this. My dad sent this to me. This was March 29th, so what, 2 days ago. And this was from Jewish Insider. 68 senators, 37 Republicans, and 31 Democrats signed onto a letter led by Senators Ben Cardin, a Democrat Maryland, and Rob Portman, Republican Ohio, urging Secretary of State Tony Blinken to work to shut down the UN Human Rights Council's Permanent Commission of Inquiry investigating the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It was established after last May's 11-day conflict between Israel and Hamas. It's interesting. 68 senators. So that's a fair number. Didn't sign it.
Senator off.
Well, it's the two-thirds majority plus one.
Right. That's what it is.
If it doesn't come, that's enough to force an issue.
And then all the ones that are like, it wouldn't look good if they signed
yeah,
that.
They can kind of let them.
Elon Omar and the people like that can, of course. That makes total sense. Yep. But yeah, that's what's going on.
68, that's quite the number because that's not, it seems like a random number, but it's not.
Right.
It's literally
two-thirds
majority plus one. It's not random at all.
Very good point. Yeah. Very good point. But yeah, so that's something Congress was up to.
Just one more senator and they really would have just been blowing themselves.
I mean I don't know, they called it
the latest endeavor by the UNHRC Human Rights Council. Quote, then, this is from the letter: the COI is the latest endeavor by the UN Human Rights Council to discredit the only Jewish state and is likely to further fuel anti-Semitism worldwide.
I would just counter, it's not the only Jewish state. America is a Jewish state.
right.
Well, they keep saying just one Jewish state. Can we just set up another one so, like, they can concentrate on fighting each other?
Well, you know what? There's actually one in the entire world.
I know what you're going to say. The Oblast. Oh, the Oblast.
But you know what's funny? The population of the Oblast is like 1% Jewish.
The autonomous Jewish Oblast.
It's only 1% Jewish anymore. Jews don't want to live there. I like how
it's
they put...
less than that, I think.
Why didn't we put Israel there?
Yeah.
I mean, it's bigger.
Have you seen where it's located?
Yes, it's all the way out in bumfuck East Asia.
Dude, but there are some areas of the United States.
I was working on this little theory that the
United States,
Russia,
they don't get any part of it. Put them in the tundra.
It borders on China. And yeah. I was just thinking, like, Russia has a massive drug problem the same way we do. And a lot of it is like Chinese-based drugs. I'm like, how are they getting into Russia? Oh. Yeah.
Maybe that's the only reason that they are still 1% of Jews in the oblast. Because
it's only 1% of Jews by population, but by law, only those of Jewish blood can have any administrative power in the oblast. Yeah.
And they're not going to give it up. And once Jews have that, they're not going to give that up. Like, why would you give some, like, there's a little chunk, a little slice of power, even if it's not that useful, it's still useful for something. That's funny. I guess that's true. But, my thing is, why don't Jews go there? There's plenty of rooms, bigger.
We kind of have our own, like the Bronx Oblast or the
Putin says we've got no problem with Jews.
The Miami Oblast.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with Putin,
but I wonder if he'd ever do some sort of wink and nod thing, saying, "I love Jews. Yeah, I hate Nazis." Well, I've got no idea why they're all leaving.
Well, I think the issue is that. The reason is because I've been thinking this for a while. If you read the history of Putin, is very, very interesting. Jews really liked him at first, and you can find stuff going back to the 90s praising him. But once it gets to around 2002, they really didn't like him. And there have been articles in America, from academic articles and publications, for years by Jews at all of these different think tanks and such, just talking about the problems of Russia. And the sort of hysteria amped up. And after 2014, it started in 2002 when he expelled, what's his name? Was it Khodorkovsky?
Yes. Khodorkovsky.
Right. When he expelled him. Then, so they didn't like that, but they're like, all right, it's one guy. And then it's like, then the Georgia thing.
Is this
they didn't like
repeating
that,
itself?
Because right?
you've often talked about how international communism, which, you know, was of course run entirely by Jews, became incredibly anti-Stalin once he, like, slipped the chain. And when they turned on Putin, is that when they realized that, oh, perhaps putting, like, a slippery company man with a genius-level IQ in charge of Russia and just assuming he was going to be our dog was a mistake. Like,
And the thing I would say about this is it shows you what kinds of systems, because even when Jews liked Putin, they were still putting out this agitation about Russia's system and the presidentialism in Russia and how authoritarian it is.
Oh, that's just the, what do they call it in wrestling again? That's the,
kayfabe?
Kayfabe.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was, because now they still, you know, because the problem that Jews have, and this is the problem they learned from the Soviet Union as well, is that an authoritarian system can ultimately purge them. Right? They cannot in a liberal system.
Terrible. Has that ever happened?
Yes, in a liberal system, Jews are invincible because they can have all the power, and they can pretend like you're a nut for thinking that they have it. That's not an option in either a communist system or in the current Russian system. Power
isn't hidden. Right now,
that's why they don't like Russia. Power in Russia isn't
a nuclear power, is it not?
The power in Russia isn't hidden. It's not. Yeah. There's no veil. You know who's exercising. Even if
it's
not Putin.
Orban in Hungary, it's the same thing. It's like, it's like when you, I mean,
that's why they don't like illiberalism. Because power isn't hidden.
Well, that's why they don't like when democracy works. When democracy works, you get a popular government. And when you have a popular government, the government gets whoever's the leader gets a huge majority. If they're popular, you know, so.
They also don't like democracy just because they don't agree with what people want.
Right. So, you know, the way they define democracy always has to be this.
It's always minority rights, markets, civil society, meaning like NGOs that they control. It's all the same shit.
Right. Yeah.
They don't like authority. I don't know which one of you came up with this.
That now, they'll work with Putin.
And it works.
Because they have to.
That thing you do.
They'll work with China because they have to.
Democracy. But what's that?
No, my point is that they'll work with these groups.
Democracy, you just do with us. Oh my God, this lag is killing us.
That's okay. Let's let him go first and then you go.
I'm going right now. So My point is that they will work with these systems, but the system they want to export is ours.
Yes.
They'll work with anybody.
Yes.
Because they have to. The system they want to export is the one that we have.
Yes.
So yeah. Anyway, that's all I wanted to get out. Go ahead, Rand.
I just wanted to bring up the thing. I don't know which one of you boys came up with it, but I've literally applied this many times and it's never failed. Whenever you get one of those articles harping on about democracy, and you can pull one up, you can just pull one up off Google, dissolving like threat to our democracy or our examination of our democracy. You just do word substitution with Jewish power,
yeah,
and it never fails.
It works.
It reads 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could do. What is it? Yeah, it definitely works.
This is a grave threat to our Jewish power.
Yes. Well, that's how they use it.
Yeah, I had
this
to.
This is a grave threat to
rich people and Jews.
I had to Google this to get the exact quote. It's Hitler's first anti-Semitic writing, the Gemlich letter from 1919 that he wrote to his superior officer in the army. He says this, in autocratically ruled states, he whines for the favor of his majesty and misuses it like a leech fastened upon the nations. In democracies, he vies for the favor of the masses, cringes before the majesty of the people, and recognizes only the majesty of money. I love that because it's just like it's so yeah. And those are the two systems, you know. If it's an autocrat, then you're going to whine for the favor of the autocrat, and then be a leech on it. And if it's a democratic state, you're going to be always the masses, and then just subverting it completely. You know, the thing of public opinion. He says in the same letter, it's like something like his method of warfare is that public opinion which is never expressed by him, but which is nevertheless managed and falsified by it, by the press, by the
right,
press.
Right, right.
And that's what that reporter was
so
doing.
So once
you know, the one that's,
once, yeah, one, yeah, yeah, he kept saying
a lesser known historical artifact is the letter that the officer, his commanding officer, wrote back to Hitler, which was, "Bruh, I just asked for an inventory of the stockroom."
Actually, you could just, if you do join the military for the benefits and you're looking for a discharge, now I don't know, you might get dishonorable, just write your officer, your commanding officer, a letter like this. Just copy and paste it, update a few things, you know, and it would be a good get out of Army service.
Yeah, I think though that even that letter,
didn't our friend Patrick Little do something like that? He said they were doing robo recruiting just a couple of years ago.
I'll just say like Jews rape kids
like
into this
Jewish
phone.
Manifesto or something. And he said he never called it back again.
You know, I said that's what I said. Well, I actually knew a guy who did that stuff, and I asked him. I was like, if I were to walk in to the recruiting station and say like the reason I want to join the military is to destroy Israel, what would happen? He's like, if you were black, they would say, okay, sign here. Because they just don't give a shit.
Well, it depends on what the climate is. I think a year ago, they would be like, get out of here, you know?
Well, I
a
think it also,
now,
I think,
a year from now, they would be like, oh.
Well, I think they also know that, like, once you're in the Marines, like, your fucking opinion don't matter at all. Right.
Well, if you're going to
now.
Join the Ukrainian military, they'd be like, "Oh, tell me more."
Oh, yes. If you're going to go join the Ukrainians, then they'll be like, "Oh, we can get you right up to the front lines."
Oh yeah, man, right to the top of the line. Put this guy in the elite special group that's going to
yes,
go right
yeah,
in on the first
right,
wave.
Yeah,
you know?
There you go. You're right up front. You're right at those Russian tanks. You right. You're good.
Imagine if they actually tried to reinstate the draft in America, and then word got around that all you had to do was like be anti-Semitic.
No, yeah. I'm telling you, dude. I'm telling you, word will get around.
You'd have hippies going like, "I fucking hate Jews."
Right, and that's why they're never. That's why I don't think they'll do it. What they're gonna, they were, they're
yeah,
willing.
They'll never bring the draft.
They can't because the level of instability it would cause. It would be such a boon to us politically for them to do it. But I will say this one thing, and then we got to go because Stryker is starting.
The moment about the. Oh yeah, sorry. Just real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's currently a thing. I know you guys referenced it. I've seen the article as well. Recruitment levels have like fallen through the floor. The army's literally saying that like we cannot maintain our standing numbers. We are being forced to downsize. We don't want to downsize. We got the budget. We can maintain these numbers with money,
yes.
But we can't maintain it with men.
Right.
And I mean, there's been this prevailing theory that, like, they want to, and maybe they did, and maybe they didn't think it was going to work out this way, that they wanted to, like, just have, like, you know, white guys doing the command and control, you know, the stuff that, you know, like, blacks right. and browns can't do. But they wanted to fill the rank and file with, like, blacks and browns who are completely disinterested with the idea of, like, well, everything that, like, you'd expect, like, a standing army from a free nation to be for. So they could be used to suppress.
Good luck getting niggers actually fight. Good fucking luck.
Yeah, and that's the thing that they seem to be finding out is, like, no matter how many benefits you shower them with,
they don't.
Like, the blacks and browns.
Blacks
just
don't
want to
fight. They don't even, you know what? They wouldn't even want to fight, like, a white militia in America. Like, if it ever came to it. They just don't want to fight.
They literally rout.
They will run away right away.
If 10 Cabal boys came over the hill firing shotguns wildly at them, they would drop their M16s
yes.
and run.
No, there's no question.
Well, yeah, there was all the Steven Spielberg type like movies about the black regiments in World
nonsense.
War II. And
dude,
and
you want to know what's
funny? You know, in Gettysburg.
That's why they're called movies, and that's why they're made by Steven Spielberg.
You want to know what's
Glory,
so funny?
Glory, that was the film. Glory,
here's
you know,
how
the,
you
the,
know
the Civil War.
That shit is bullshit. Because Jews that would talk about when that stuff was coming out, when movies like that were coming out about Tuskegee Airmen and all that crap, all that nonsense, you would get Jews because even into the 80s, they were doing the Holocaust projects where they were finding the so-called survivors and filming them, doing interviews with them and publishing stuff about it, right? They're doing this. I don't think they do it anymore because they're all old and dead or whatever. But in the 80s, it was still a big thing. And when that kind of stuff was coming out, as you can follow, if you can date when certain prominent Holocaust survivors tell their narratives, you can see how they're influenced by the movies about World War II that were popular at the time. So you would get these Jews in like the early 90s telling you that they remember when their concentration camp was liberated
right.
by the black soldiers. And then of course you look at what actually happened. And the black soldiers were nowhere near. In fact, their concentration camp was liberated by the USSR. So called liberated, right?
Mike, we need good stories.
Right.
Yeah. My great uncle who was at Anzio and was in the infantry and fought all over Europe, he said that my dad told me this, I didn't get it from him directly, but that the black were like notoriously cowardly and they were always like shooting each other, friendly fire incidents, because they were scared stiff of like the SS, you know. And
yes,
dad would always imitate like that. They would, you know, somebody be walking on patrol, and he'd go, "Who dat?" You know, and turn and fire, you know, and kill his own guy. That would happen. But yeah, that's what they, you know, Jazz and I were talking about how we want to revive the term spooks. I think that spook, like Jaime is an old word that I think should be back in search. But spook, I think, is a great. Sheeny, that was it, not Jaime.
Sheeny is the best.
That's the one.
That's so good.
Think about how demoralizing that is on the army as a whole. Like, even if you got some token blacks, like, in a rear echelon position. Like, say, like, you got some, like, scout group, you know, going out and doing a very difficult mission, very high stress, very dangerous. You come back from your recon, and then a black sentry just fucking plugs your corporal by accident.
Yeah, no, but the word spook, I mean, it refers to that they're spooky, that they, you know, they're superstitious and they're spooky
spooks.
And then they're not, it's not a good, it's not, I mean, that's your, you
Dude,
can have
you
Lloyd
should listen
Austin
to, some South Africans talk about the kind of shit that the blacks, the crazy folklore that they've got, ghosts and shit they believe in there, yeah.
What I was talking about on FTN was, Diane Fossey, the famous the advocate of guerrilla. Yeah, she got in trouble. She was a little politically incorrect there. After they made that film with Sigourney Weaver called Guerrillas in the Mist about her. She was murdered, brutally killed by nigger poachers, and they like chopped off her head or something with a machete. But for years before that, she learned the only way she could stop them from slaughtering this very endangered group of guerrillas, she dedicated her life to protecting these creatures, was to basically convince them that she was a witch and do things like basically scare them by dressing up a certain way and making them think that there was magic
That's
going
amazing.
On. And it's on her Wikipedia page. You can read about it. It's That's, really something.
I've got like newfound respect for Dianne Fossey. That's amazing.
Oh man, the woman had courage and conviction, but yeah, she dealt with that.
We need
phenomenon.
Those, like those gorillas. I mean, I guess they're the direct descendants of niggers. Now,
they had a sense of who they was.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, the one thing I wanted to say, and then we got to go because Stryker's doing his show, and I don't want to butt into it too much, is that what Hitler was saying about Jews and democracy, I think that, he probably had it right for his time, but Jews have had several innovations since then in how they operate, particularly this idea of civil society and NGOs. And yeah. I think once they got, and that's even something that I've seen grown like a cancer in my lifetime. I mean, it would be really interesting to track the growth of so-called NGOs and how many there are and how much work they're doing and how this has become an industry into itself, right? And it's really, I don't think they really were doing that. I mean, I think in Hitler's day, the way the Jews were doing is they were doing big bombastic press stuff, media stuff to manipulate opinion and stuff the way they do. And here they do that, but they also then, this whole civil society and NGO industrial complex is a relatively new thing. And it's also another way of Jews hiding who's in power.
Yeah.
Because it's just this myriad, this patchwork, this mesh of organizations, and they all wield some amount of power in some area, but you can never point to any one person that's in charge. And
The press was called the Fourth Estate, and based on the idea of the three estates are like the peasantries, the farmers, the knightly class, and the priestly class. Yeah. I think if I'm getting that right, and then the press is like the Fourth Estate. So
NGOs,
the
NGOs, like the Fifth Estate.
Well, it's like the Fifth Estate. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, civil society, so called. That just means Jewish run NGOs, but yeah. And it also just if you want to the funny thing is it offers a way to explain the Jewish question if you can just show all these organizations and how they're all run by Jews, but that takes a little bit of research. You can do it though. But then it's almost like, but once somebody figures that out, it's like, all right.
Well, that's how somebody sent me a couple of years back all this information on, these Antifa bookstores. There's one in Pittsburgh. They're all over. There's one very famous one in Asheville, I think, North Carolina.
Yeah.
That is run by some tranny, and they are all getting money through basically like
that.
Yeah, it basically through like the tranny that was running and owned the bookstore in Asheville, which is like the hub of Antifa activity in that area. Mm-hmm. That tranny was sitting on the board, I think, of a nonprofit that nonprofit got a huge gigantic grant, like $1 million from direct like one of the Open Society Foundation.
Right.
NGOs. So that's what's keeping these things. That's what's putting these things on.
Like, must have had the bottom surgery. I think they need a cushion or something.
Oh my god.
They got a chair. They were seated.
They really
chair.
Were a chair person.
Yeah, they were like a chair person because they couldn't stand up lest their guts fall out.
Anyway,
sorry about that. But like. Yes, no, that's exactly how this works. And, I was looking into this stuff in Ukraine, and I was looking into this, Ukraine Crisis Information Center, UCIC, they call it. And this is where this was a sort of a clearinghouse for all these Jews, and it was like this media hub, and they had all these Jews were working there, and they had all these American politicians go there and give speeches and do press releases and stuff, and it was based in Mariupol, and it was also where, funny enough, they started to recruit the Azov Battalion out of, and they say this themselves in 2014. So it's like, that's how, and then of course they got money from George Soros, they got money from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, they got money for or a bunch of these Jewish neocon so-called democracy promoters, right? But it's like, it's really funny because my thing is like, okay, so Jewish neocon think tanks that promote, who the fuck elected you?
Yeah.
Who Wasn't elected you?
Who came up with calling NGOs non-Gentile organizations?
That was me. Like, that would be yours truly.
Oh man, that was great.
That was literally me.
That is fantastic. We need to spread that. That was a really good one.
More often, non-Gentile organization.
Yeah, because it just gets right to the heart of it.
Because it's what they are. But anyway, yeah,
that's good propaganda. That's the slogan, you know. It's like right there in one.
Yes.
Can I tempt you, gentlemen, with one very, very quick Abbo story?
My wife enjoys excellent. Abbo stories.
I love them, yeah.
So just like, as you guys will be very familiar, we also spend, hundreds of millions of dollars in Dem programs.
yes.
This particular program cost multiple millions of dollars. We try and get Aboriginals into functional states. Themselves, not actual states. Our states function.
Yes.
this was a program to get Aboriginals into a trade, carpeting in particular.
Oh, boy.
They had 30 Africans. Now, for this, they had several master craftsmen who were getting paid by the government to be there. As I said, this project ran into the millions. So just bear in mind, there are 8 or 9 instructors here. They are expecting 30 applicants. 15 turned up. By about 6 months in, there was one guy. One fucking guy.
Oh my God.
With eight master craftsman instructors. And so now they had, they had their golden black. You know, they had their incredibly special black that they were literally spending millions of dollars on. This was a 3-year course. He was about 6 months off graduating, and they were saying, he's doing really well. This guy will actually be a good carpenter. And then he stabbed someone with a screwdriver. Driver outside of a bar, and he's doing 4 years in prison. But they are very excited for the day he comes out of prison so they can pick up the program again and get him through his last 6 months so he can be a carpenter.
Oh my God.
But if you give him those
only
tools,
costs about $10 million.
But my thing is, are they going to have any responsibility for the next person he stabs? Because he's giving him a bunch of sharp implements.
Yeah, he's got access to a wide variety,
of instruments he could use to maim and hurt people. He's got hammers, screwdrivers, God knows what he could do with these things.
See, when you get
pliers.
Into the thing of equality, and it's like the system has to assert that race is a social construct, but when you're dealing with the Aborigines down there, down under, it's actually, they have to take it to the species is a social construct, that it's a little genus is a, how far are you going to go with this?
Phylum
is
a social construct.
Right.
We actually know exactly who the Aboriginals are and the reason why they shared no common DNA with, because people commonly confuse them with Africans. They share no DNA.
Right.
They share no DNA with anybody.
They're heavily inbred Dravidians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we know they're heavily inbred because when they crossed that land bridge, we figured this out, there was less than 100 unique family units that comprise the entirety of the Aboriginal.
So you're saying they're inbred
Pajits. They walked to Australia. They are literally inbred Pajits and the Dravidians.
lower than the ones that had that.
I know you remember this, Mike. I know you remember that video clip of when the Indians had the stones thrown at
them.
Oh,
I remember that. That was hilarious. They were horrified.
They were cousins. That was their people.
Yeah. But the thing is, those look like light-skinned, probably Brahmin tier Indians. And they're like, why have you not put these untouchables in cages?
Right.
Why are you letting them roam free?
You know, if you go to the Smithsonian, the Natural History Museum there, there's an exhibit of all the non-human humanoid species that used to exist, and it's really eye-opening because the gap between us and chimps is very large, but there used to be all these other human-like species that were in between, and the Aborigines seem
Aboriginals
the closest to it.
Literally genocided
the
human race.
Right, right.
The Australian pygmy. We've found the bones. They don't teach you this one in high school, but the Aboriginals literally
so they already genocided
and cannibalized
humans.
An entire race of people.
Well, and there's a guy who keeps posting the comment in FTN, and I got to do more research, but he's saying about how 30% of African DNA is not the sub-Saharan Africans. It's non-human DNA. It's where do you draw the line is what's human? Because, you know, white people are part Neanderthal. But it's like there's the races as they exist today are, it's totally plausible to me that they are composed of elements of former actual species that were human-like species, close enough that they could interbreed,
right.
But not.
And,
so, you
and
know
white
what I mean?
People are composed of elements of a godlike Aryan race that came from a distant star.
That came from the Phoenicians.
I know.
The Atlanteans.
Right. Yes. Yes, we are. We are the.
If the out of Africa theory is correct, then surely the ones who actually stayed in the home country would have still maintained interbreeding with that evolutionary step between man and monkey, right? That's what's been holding them back. We know to this day they're still fucking monkeys.
Yeah, it's sort of like people that come from an abusive family, like if you ultimately just leave and go on to create your own life, you'll do better. And if you stay inside the abusive home,
one fact that I, somebody made this point years ago and I it has like haunted me ever since, that the races of man are not growing closer together in spite of all the globalization and all the intermixing. We see coal burners more and more everywhere you go. What's in fact happening with each generation, the big pools like the Han Chinese are all growing further apart genetically. And what is happening with the races of man?
They're going to be the only ones that go to space. Watch out for the space Chinese. They're going
what's
to come
happening
back
is
like
the beginning of speciation.
With the giant throbbing brains.
Right. What's happening with race is the beginning of speciation. I mean, if you just track it out on a long enough timeline, new species would come out of these different races. And we're on track for that to happen if you just study the way the genetics are drifting apart. Yeah. So that's one of those things.
And
that
the white one would be the best.
The white one would be the best, but that gets back to the old point, you know, that if whites are mixing and nobody else is mixing, you don't have humanity's not becoming beige, you know, like we're not all forming. It's just one race going out of existence.
Humanity's not becoming better.
No.
Like why you can't improve now it improves it. But my thing is like I think Jews
Will Smith slapping what's his name proves to me that the humanity is not getting better. That was in the
But
Jews
even
cycle.
So that's just like
I know.
That was just like, dumb. But yeah, I mean I was just niggers everywhere. But I'm saying my thing to Jews it's like you're going to need like who are you going to be your functionaries Jews? Who's going to do your work? I guess they feel like Pajits.
Yeah.
The Pajis can do the functionary technical stuff. Like, they can actually keep things going, and they're not going to raise their heads up too high. Although the Pajis have been doing a hell of a hilarious job in pushing back on
certain things. Oh, yeah. Mike, this is the fact that India and Pakistan are on the same page. On the same page.
Allow me to complete.
Yes. The fact that India and Pakistan are united against the U.S. on this is remarkable.
Said we would go. I got to play some audio.
All right, we can keep going though.
No, I've got some audio I got to play.
Oh.
So just keep going. Filibuster for a second.
Filibuster. Okay. Okay.
Well, you were bringing out Warren. You were talking about like how our species are becoming increasingly more divergent. I've been toying with this little theory that like part of the whole like you know mix them up kind of thing, and the de-emphasis on space exploration. I've been working on this idea that like they don't want us to get off this planet because they wouldn't be able to control us if we did. Like they haven't figured out a way yet that they can maintain total control if we actually start colonizing space.
I don't think Jews are all powerful. Jews are not all powerful. They're not even close to all powerful.
But
they make all kinds of mistakes.
We won't be allowed to set up a colony on Mars unless one of the first things we build is a fucking
synagogue. It's a Holocaust museum.
But what I was going to say though was I think that the planning cycle, and this is a difference with the Chinese plan because they have a one party state and because of the way they're structured and because they're a very, very ancient country, they plan in much longer timelines. The United States it seems like, has gotten ever more.
Well, because Jews are grabbing what they can. They don't care about the long term. They are literally.
Jews are not empire builders. They are not. They are not.
They're leeches.
They're leeches. Yes, exactly. They are not. And that's why the Biden administration is failing.
Yeah.
That's why the Biden administration is failing. Biden has the most Jewish government, the most Jewish cabinet of any president
in
history.
And everybody fucking hates it.
That's an accomplishment. And it's a total fiasco.
The most Jewish fucking family Christmas dinner.
Right.
Yeah,
and the other thing is this.
Total fiasco.
The other thing is this. Now, this isn't necessarily the defense of Trump, but Biden is just as unpopular as Trump, but there's nobody that loves him. Trump was unpopular, but there was a group of people that loved him.
Well, he's
Biden doesn't even have that.
At governing. He's more unsuccessful at governing.
But you,
than
but
Trump.
You think I mean, about what I said though. Like,
oh yeah,
Trump. Even if he was unpopular with 70% of the country, 30% of the country loved him. Biden doesn't have that. He's unpopular with 70% of the country, and 30% of the country is lukewarm.
Well, he was a compromise candidate. I mean, nobody who voted
for
Biden.
I got the video here.
Okay, let's hear this.
So here's more of this. Allow me to complete stuff.
The position of America very uncertain here. Though I don't want to get drawn into that argument, I'd like to remind you, Professor, you are a professor of political science at the University of California, Berkeley, and therefore you would be, allow me to complete, sir, I'm speaking, you would be very aware that the U.S. troops are secretly present in 22 African nations. And I would say to you that who is America to say how Russia should not be trusted on their claims of reducing military operations when recent investigations have revealed that the U.S. Special Operations Forces are deployed in at least 22 African countries, taking part in quote-unquote direct action operations which ordinary Africans are rarely told about. Please find out what's happening in Mali, Mauritania, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, Somalia, Djibouti, Cameroon, Burkina Faso, Algeria, Ethiopia, Ghana, Kenya, Libya, Tanzania,
sir,
Tunisia. Sir, please. Please, sir. One minute. What does it have to do? Okay, so all I'm saying is that was in the response to the question of Russia reducing military operations. And my point is that the Americans are operating in a covert way in several countries trying to influence democracies where they have no right to be. That was the context. That was a specific.
We're
I never speak out of context, Professor.
Killing civilians.
That was the specific context.
That's completely irrelevant. That's
completely irrelevant
to this conflict
with Ukraine.
Oh, it's completely irrelevant. It's completely irrelevant. I'll tell you why, Professor Fish. I'm willing to argue this out with you. I would say this to you, Professor Fish. Allow me to complete. I'm countering you now, Professor Fish. Why don't you ask anyone? You are saying.
That's a good one too. I like that.
Now I'm speaking to you as well. And my point to you specifically is this whole argument that others are duplicitous and we are not. Others carry out games of treachery in global affairs. And we don't. When I hear that from the Americans,
we're absolutely duplicitous and treacherous. No, definitely we are. There's no question. Like, I would never suggest that America is not duplicitous and treacherous. Believe me. So the guy he's talking to is this guy, M. Stephen Fish, and oh boy, this piece of work. He's a political science professor at Berkeley. Pretty sure he's Jewish. Couldn't find any direct evidence, but he probably
political science professor at Berkeley.
Right. I mean, what's the likelihood he's not? And his name is Fish and everything. And there's another video of him in this same debate, which I can't find it. I'll put it on it would take me a couple minutes to find it. This one was on my Telegram. There's another video of him in this same debate where he is, He is saying, unless maybe this is it. He's basically saying like, Ukraine, like Russia does not even have a viable military. And he's saying India is buying military equipment from Russia now and you're just getting junk that falls apart right away. Just like all these Russian tanks and trucks in Ukraine, they're just like falling apart. Russia's missiles aren't exploding. Russia doesn't even have a viable military. And I'm like, and there's two
Ukrainians in like New York City police vests.
Right. Well, the funny thing is
two. That would be great if the Russians were shooting at them with pistols.
Yes, there was two Russians on the debate, and they're like dying laughing as he's saying this. And I'm just like, this Jew knows he's fucking lying. Like, it's amazing. And it's like he's trying to browbeat these Indians. This is the thing. These kikes keep going on this guy's show and trying to browbeat India into, like, not buying oil and grain from Russia and now apparently to not buy military gear. And this guy just owns them. And the best thing is he doesn't let this guy finish a single word. He's like, he's not even pretending to have a debate. He's just browbeating him, but he's doing it. He's like, no, look, I'm arguing with you now. I'm countering you. I'm letting you argue, but please, you have to let me finish. And then he just falls over him. Totally. And it's just really great to see a Jew on the other end of an exchange like that.
Yeah.
Just to see you Jews suffering under that.
What does it mean when you say that Russia, what does it mean when you say Russia doesn't have a functional military when...
It means you're a fucking lying Jew.
You look at, like, I think Germany has like 14 operational tanks.
I think it's like 100 or so, but yeah.
That's like a third of a Russian tank platoon, or maybe I'm thinking of the Dutch army or something like that. But yeah. I've spoken about this before, like all Western armies, and I know you guys have hit on this before, but it's something that's near and dear to me because I'm ex-military. That all Western armies, except for the American one, are boutique armies.
Yes,
right.
They are not designed to be part of a conflict. They're designed to show up and be part of the
They're designed to buy weapons from American companies.
Wow, yeah.
We don't even buy that many weapons.
Right, that's true.
We don't fucking maintain a fucking standing army. Like thinking of the Australians, we've got 30 tanks. Well, we've got about 48, but 30 only work at any given time because you guys gave us the worst tanks to operate. In the world. In
Russia has 12,500 tanks.
We have one fucking artillery battalion.
Dude, that's ridiculous. Russia, you also have a huge defensive ocean around you. Russia has 12,500 tanks. Russia doesn't even have a military. But they also expect to fight that kind of war.
I wasn't very good at maths. That's why I'm an online racist. But I think, let's say that's... it's got to be about like 300, 400 Dutches.
There's a YouTube channel. I'm trying to find it. It's like militaries compared, basically, and it just goes through and lists all the and they do it by country. So they'll take one and take another. It's global analysis
I've been looking at that.
They do great lineups and you know, it's really fascinating when you see compared like what, cause in a lot of metrics, Russia is ahead of the United States.
Yes.
But you know, the U.S. is still, I will say in combat aircraft, the U.S. is way far ahead of everybody else. Yeah, that is what we do. Mike, you've been talking about this a lot. How just bombing civilians basically is like the way that the U.S. wages war. And that's,
we just bomb them until they surrender.
Well, we just saw that again with the anniversary. You know, Madeleine Albright died the day before. It was the eve of the anniversary of the U.S. bombing campaign in Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm.
Dear Lord Dark Satan, just grant me one more day before you take me home so I can see children burn one last time.
Right, exactly. And we were looking, Emily and I were doing research on her and looking at that campaign. And yeah, it's just massively disproportionate, the amount of civilians killed. And the modern politics we did before that was about Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings. It's just, it's insane how it's just normal. The thing of the straight face, you're the fucking good guys when you kill more innocent people than anybody else. Like, that's how you'd wage war.
Yeah, this pretense is just absolutely outrageous.
It took the American forces, what was it, 5 weeks to take Baghdad, which is like a parody to this current conflict when people saying, oh, it's going so slow. But in that time, they had killed something like hundreds of thousands of civilians on their way to Baghdad.
Yeah.
Now, nobody knows exactly, well, I don't trust any fucking numbers that come out of this current war, but I think once the dust is settled, I'm fairly willing to stake some clout coin on this, that there will be significantly less civilian casualties out of the Ukraine dust-up than the drive to Baghdad.
We played a video we found a show when that bombing campaign was going on where it was interviewing people on the street. And there was this guy who was ex-military. He'd been in Vietnam, but he said, yeah, and I think the bombing, we don't need to send troops in against Slobodan Milosevic. He's saying, cause, you know, it's better if we have to kill, he actually said these numbers. He said, if we have to kill 100,000 of their civilians, that's better than 100 of our military guys getting killed. That was the, and that's the, that is the, he just said out loud what's the de facto attitude. So mm-hmm. you look at Russia sending their troops in. There was another guy that they interviewed that, that was like, well, I don't know if we should send people in because, you know, I wouldn't want to go in there. So it's like, you don't want to go in. You don't want to actually take that risk, but you think it's in your country's vital interest. You know, it's in enough that you should bomb their cities, their civilians, but it's not enough in your country's thing that you personally would, like, that's the metric.
That's the attitude, and that's the attitude that's been fostered by America. And if you read,
normalized,
there's a Thomas Friedman column.
I like to watch.
There's a Thomas Friedman column in the New York Times. Now, Thomas Friedman is a slimy, smarmy, chubby,
oh, yeah.
Repulsive little kike. Just a little rat-faced, little fucking sheeny. And he wrote this column in 1999 in the New York Times about how every day Milosevic doesn't submit is another century. We take his country back. He's like, you want to do 1800s, we do it. You want to do 1300s, we do it. We'll destroy all your industrial capacity, all your railroads, all your power plants, everything. And it's just, and I'm like, dude, you're up to like a fucking lunatic. Like, you put yeah. Dr. Strange left his name.
Iraq war, man.
Yeah,
he's
no, he's a fucking filthy, warmongering, little slimy kike who he probably gets a manicure every day. His fingernails are probably more feminine. Then, you know, everyone.
Warlike, but not soldierly.
Right, know? Right. Yeah. So he's just a warmongering, fat, little, fucking chubby, greasy little shit.
Chicken hawks. Chicken
right.
hawks, you know.
It's not even chicken hawks. It's like gay, it's like, Cornish game hen hawks. Right? It's like, they're like, you know what I mean? Those like, they're like, those minor, those tiny little chickens, you know?
Yeah.
Alright, anyway, listen to this. This is his kike fish. He's like, and the self-satisfied smugness on this kike's face as he lies. I'm gonna have to play this again on TDS tomorrow, but yeah. So let me unmute.
Views about American hypocrisy, and I think that America has a lot to ponder over. Very, very much. I, and you and I are on the same page on that. But I can't believe that you're trying to make Russia look like the victim here. The fact is, I'm asking a very
special. Not going on at all. This, we've seen this before.
In Mariupol. Right? There are 12 people killed in an attack in Mykolaiv.
Right.
Here, yeah, Prof. Right. My point is that cutback really happening? Yes, Professor Fish.
No, there's no cutback going on at all. This, we've seen this before. Remember, before the invasion, Putin was saying at one point after...
But against republics of Donbass, against Russian Crimea and Cuba, in fact,
I have a...
What was your...
Mr. Menkovich, you
are passing a great number of troops along the border, or we're not going to invade.
Right. I'm sorry, I can't find it. I found it yesterday. You know, it's. I was just skipping around looking for where this fucking.
It's like a movie trailer, you know. Like
this kike bits. Fish is like talking about how Russia has no. Is this it? Is this it?
Or that Putin launched to aggressively seize.
Oh, this is
most
some,
of you.
They've got some military. Here's the thing I hate. There's an obvious like he's an obvious goy. He's like a burly military looking type. And he's like saying all this stuff like we're killing, he's the one that says we're killing terrorists, they're killing civilians. It's like, that's just such a lie. But it's like, I hate to see this kind of butt goy. Yeah. Anyway, this, I recommend people tune into like Republic TV because it's fucking funny. Maybe this is it.
Tanks that work,
oh, here
missiles
it is, here
that explode. You know, Putin asks to do these kinds of culinary tasks for him. With that kind of equipment, it would behoove that it does not have a military. It doesn't have an air force. It doesn't have an army. They can't take control of the Ukrainian skies, even though the Ukrainians are vastly outnumbered with military equipment. What we're seeing here is they simply don't have a military.
Thanks.
They don't have a military. They can be stopped by these Ukrainian civilians and armed forces, Ukrainian armed forces.
I'm sorry.
India has to consider right now. I'm speaking right now. I'm speaking right now. Hang on. What India is now going to have to consider, I know that you got a great deal. I know you get a great deal of military equipment from Russia, and I know that. But Prime Minister Modi must now be thinking, look at the quality of that military equipment. It breaks down.
Listen to this fucking
soldiers
kike.
Abandon
it. It's not even about the military equipment. This is the thing that drives me nuts about this because I've never seen this fucking addressed in the mainstream media. Only we're fucking talking about it. How about the fact that like 40% of their fucking wheat comes from Russia? Now, I've referred to this emergent power block as the Russia-China-India Super Friends treehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it because I came up with it.
Mm.
But look, I've never actually seen them address this. There are people in India who, in living memory, remember mass starvation and food riots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Well, it's not even...
They don't give a fuck about, like, if they're given shoddy Russian equipment.
But I don't even think... That's not even...
Like, half a billion fucking peasants banging on doors demanding to be fed.
Yeah, there's that, but it's also just, like, the audacity to sit there and say, like, Russia doesn't have a military. I mean, it's just a lie. Like, I don't even know about the equipment they're selling to India or whatever, but it's like, and then the fact that he's trying to use it, he's not even really debating. See, it's supposed to be a debate, and he's not even debating. He's just telling lies. And the Russian guests on the show are just dying laughing at this shit about how they don't have a military. Because it's just obviously not true. And he's saying they can't take control of the skies over the Ukraine. Really? Well, then how come they had a 40-mile-long supply convoy backed up from Kiev for over a week, and not a single airstrike hit that convoy?
What did you call these? This NATO Ned? Was that it? The Baghdad Bob?
Yeah, NATO Ned is Ned Price, the State Department spokesman.
Right.
NATO Ned. NATO Ned. Yeah. Anyway. Thanks, Rand. I'm going
to
go now.
Do with that.
We've already cut into Strike
Kevin,
Yourself
Kevin, Maripol
for a half
Marvin. Out. Yeah, all right.
Maripol Marvin.
I did
But yeah, we got to go.
Marvin.
That's good. That's good.
Right, thanks very much, guys.
All right. Thanks,
Take
man.
Take care, man.
Talk to you later. Everybody, see you later. I got to go because we cut into Striker Show for like a half hour. I feel bad. Anyway, whatever. Go listen to Striker Show now. All right. See you.
Yes.